This is Hollywood Outsider, weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is episode 290, and we're discussing our favorite fan theories this week. We're also going to have a little bit of movie and TV discussion, trivia segments, some upcoming releases, spoiler-free reviews of Happy Death Day, The Babysitter, and Haze. And after our normal show, that's right, we're going to get everything else that's fun out of the way. We're going to have a little bit of a candid conversation about the Harvey Weinstein effect. Be sure to get the Hoe and the Go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, where reviews are appreciated, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hoes, Scotty Clark.
Hey, how's everybody doing today?
Fantastic. That's as really as chipper as I get. And John Davenport.
Is the reason why you're chipper the same reason why we've been doing this for about 45 minutes?
No. Skype hates us today. Skype is not working, so we're trying different ways, and we're going to see how this works out.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yay. Don't give John any buttons to push.
John, back away from the microphone and all the toys.
Okay. Am I safe now?
I think so. I don't know. All right. Well, one thing I wanted to talk about before we get into everything, one of our listeners, Matt, shared this article with us on AV Club about the owners of the Breaking Bad house. They had to put a fence up to stop people from throwing pizza on their roof. How do you feel about that?
It's such a dumb prank. I mean, it costs you like $20 to do that, right? I mean, pizzas are expensive. Just to throw it on a roof?
Even a prank or anything. It's just people who are trying to live out their ridiculous show about bad people who sold drugs.
Hey, not ridiculous show, my friend. Great show and full of delicious pizza is what I would say. And chicken. Wouldn't you just like sit on – I would just camp on the roof, man, every night because free pizza every day.
You're going to eat pizza off the roof? Dude, you won't even use a public restroom unless you have to.
If it's free pizza on the roof, I would chance it. Yeah. Free is better than germs.
I'm going to remember you said that.
Yeah.
Free is better than germs.
It won't hold. Here.
Germs are free.
Yeah, so are STDs, and that doesn't work out for people either. Yeah, that was too far. I don't know where the line is. Do you feel bad for them? Because they actually, I mean, I get people driving by the house, but what does it take for you to say, Stan, you know what I'm thinking? Why don't we go get a pizza? Why don't we go through the effort of ordering a pizza, picking up a pizza? We're going to drive there, pick it up, come back here, or maybe even have it delivered. And then we're just going to see if we can toss it on the roof like Walter White did.
Do you think like third world countries hear about this story and they just go, guys, we're hungry.
Jeez.
You're throwing food on the roof.
That's an excellent point.
Send something over this way. I don't know.
Come over and throw it on my hut. Do it.
Not Pizza Hut, but it's a hut.
Literally, it is a Pizza Hut if you do it. Come on, people. Help out the poor.
I just couldn't imagine doing that to a stranger. Anyway, I understand the house is kind of iconic now. It's very famous for the TV show, but I would never go spend the money to inconvenience somebody like that because they got to get up there and take it down. Are they leaving it in the box or are they taking it out of the box like you did in the it came out of the box when he threw it, right?
Oh, if you're going to do it, you go full bore, right? I mean,
right. You got to do it exactly how you did it.
Because, I mean, you could chuck a pizza in a pizza box from across a fence, I think, onto a roof if you're doing it right. But you're not going to get a whole pie by itself from a good distance unless it's frozen. There you go. People buy frozen pizzas. They're just going to fling them like Frisbees over the fence.
Cause a concussion when they hit grandma in the backyard.
Breaking windows. Over. Instead of throwing like bricks with death threats attached to a brick, they just got a pizza coming through their window.
And how are they cutting it? Are they cutting it? Are we doing it pie style? Are we doing it in squares? What are we doing?
I don't even remember what it was in the show. It was just like a full pie from my memory.
It was a full pie. Yeah. It was a full like jumbo size pie.
It wasn't even cut yet, right? In the show?
No, it was cut. Yeah. I think we're having like a 10-minute conversation on pizzas on Breaking Bad's roof, but I don't care. It's funny.
Yeah. That says something about fandom that makes me crazy. It's just like how people think their fandom is so much more important than somebody's private property. It makes me crazy about the lack of thought people put into this stuff.
Well, here's a question I have too. Not that I'm not defending these people that are doing this, but the people that own the house, did they own it prior to the filming of this or did somebody buy it after the show was popular?
I think before. I think they've lived there a long time.
Okay.
They rented it out. It was, I mean, they got paid to use that house as, you know, as the property of Walter White. And now people just won't let them be.
Is that a risk you take by doing that?
No. I mean, is that fair? I mean, who's really, I get people driving by. I think that's a risk you take. People tossing pizzas on the roof.
Oh, sure.
Not necessarily part of the.
Again, I'm not justifying. I think it's really dumb that people are doing this, but. Is it something that you expect?
They've even gone so far as sit there and walk up to the owners of the house saying, or knock on the door saying, "Hey, can you move your cars out of the way so we can take a picture of your house?"
Wow,
that's awesome! All right, let's move on before people think this is the pizza podcast. Drive director Nicholas Winden Refn has apparently launched his own streaming service called Buy NWR for free. That's not fully of yourself at all. By NWR, your initials. Okay. When it launches next February, each quarter will center around a theme. So the first is going to be Regional Renegades, exploitation gems from the Southern USA. And the second is going to be Restored and Rediscovered Classics of American Independent Cinema. So he's looking to bring more cultish films to our audience for free. Even though it feels a little pretentious, I still think it's a pretty cool idea.
What I'm not understanding the pretentious nature outside of just naming after his own self.
That's really where I'm going with it. Like when you name something with your own initials, I'm feeling that's pretentious.
I mean, right. If it's not like a holiday,
I name my business after my initials. Just saying,
or a land that you conquer.
We're not going there. Anyway, look for that. Look for by NWR. I guess next spring that's coming out. All right. How about an interesting fact? Marvel has not been able to kick off independent Hulk movies because of a lot of things, including Universal's rights issue. I don't know. That's complicated. So they instead are deciding to build a trilogy of sorts within their upcoming movies for Hulk. Like within the bigger movies like Thor and Avengers and stuff, they're going to have a mini trilogy for Hulk in those movies. How do you feel about that? Is that a novel approach? Does Marvel do everything right at this point?
Well, I don't know about them doing anything right, everything right, but the idea is actually sound, and it's not really anything new that they've done before, because we know so much more about Bucky, we know so much more about Falcon and everybody because of their storylines or what they've contributed in the movies before. But the idea of making Hulk a more full-fledged character, to me, works better this way, because without people to bounce off of, without people to work with, all he is a big green mound emoting, and he doesn't hold up a movie by himself very well. But they're even going to take him so far as to showing more of the battle between Banner and the Hulk, and how those two personalities go back and forth. So I think it has a much better chance of working than a movie by itself.
See, I disagree. I really feel like Hulk works better as a side character, like he has in the Avengers. I never really got into either of the Hulk movies before. It just wasn't as interesting of a story. Now, granted, I've never watched the original.
I don't think you disagree. I think that's what John said. I think you agree.
Yeah, I thought you said
he actually agrees.
Okay, I'm sorry. I misunderstood your last sentence. I thought you said that you thought it would work better as a film. So we are in agreement. I apologize. I misheard.
We agree. A film by himself, big Gumby character, a film with other people, he has somebody to work with.
Right. Okay. I apologize. I misheard.
Excellent. Wow. Solves that one.
I mean, in the big deal with this is that they're making him talk. Because that was the big reveal in the, oh man, am I spoiling a trailer?
Really? No. Well, it's in the trailer, and it's also in Avengers. I mean, he's talked in other movies.
Okay. Well, this is more complete anyway.
Well, now you're spoiling. You just keep going into it. Wait, but, Bruce Banner Hulk? Is that what you're telling me? You son of a bitch.
No, but that's a big thing, and that's how they're going to make this into a trilogy. And even though it's not a standalone trilogy, does this mean it's going to be like a side arc within the movie where he's going to go off on his own little adventure?
Mm-hmm. That sounds like
that sounds distracting, to be honestly, because have you ever seen a movie where it did that? I'm gonna give you a really ridiculous example. Okay, I know I'm gonna mention a film that has absolutely nothing to do with Marvel whatsoever. It's not even the same league, but it did something like this. Despicable Me 3. Neither of you saw that movie, but They did that in that movie with the Minions. You know how they tried to make Despicable Me movies, and then they tried to make a Minions movie standalone, and the standalone movie didn't work for Minions. It just nobody really bought it too much because they work better as side characters. So what they did in Despicable Me 3 was they had the Minions go off on their own little adventure, which was funny, but it just took away from the main plot of the story. It just they were detached from what was going on. It was just like their own separate thing, and it felt distracting. That's my worry about this. If it's just a side little tangent, then it's gonna make us think less about the rest of the story or wish we were back in that main story.
I don't know if it's going to be as much of a side tangent as it is going to be more just giving him more front and center of the story than before. Just like with – I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell because it's still too early to tell. But I think there, instead of it being a side tangent, it's going to be more like – hey, look, we're watching the Hulk grow. We're watching the relationship between Banner and the Hulk change right there while he's standing next to Thor. I think it's more likely going to be something like that.
I think it's cool. I think it's cool because you have a character people love. He's not going to get his own movie. And honestly, I agree with everybody that he shouldn't get one. He really doesn't need
his own movie. Wait, are
you sure? I'm absolutely positive. I agree with both of you that he doesn't need one. He doesn't need his own movie. He is a great side character. Not everybody needs to have their own flick. And I love it. Kind of like, Black Widow, Hawkeye, none of them. They don't need their own solo movies. Just because they're cool characters don't mean they need that. All I want is my Lonely Hulk song. As long as that comes up within this mini trilogy, I'm going to be a pretty happy guy.
How did that not make it in the first two films? Or did it and I just missed it?
Probably Universal owns it because I think they own that TV show and they're not going to give up that great song. I mean, it makes you cry. Happy tears.
You really need to just like splice that tears in right here.
What's that?
You just need to splice that into this right in the episode.
I always love when you're doing a podcast and people tell you where you should splice stuff in it. That's always my favorite thing.
I know.
Why don't you splice it in it? Why don't you? What are you doing?
You'll let me in anywhere near it.
Like you would offer to get anywhere near it. Should it. All right. Well, Sony is working on a Settlers of Catan or Catan. I don't know how you say it.
Catan.
I don't play it.
What
Catan. Is it? Catan. Like Chris Catan from Saturday Night Live?
Yes. Monkey yes. Guy?
Okay. So they're working on this movie. It's based on a board game. I don't know much about it. So I have no vested interest. This is up to you guys. Do we have a verdict yet? Can board games be successful movies other than Clue?
I mean, it worked so well for Battleship.
screw you, Scott. I think Battleship is great.
Battleship is great.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's just about as much plot going on in Battleship as there is in Settlers of Catan, so I don't really understand.
What is it about? Tell me what it's about. I'm a novice.
There's not even anything. It's a very – it's the gateway game that you get people into European-style board games because here in America we like things like Monopoly and Clue and Life and games like that aren't – nearly as strategic and there's not a lot going on. This one is a very simplistic game that imagine if you took Monopoly and just had just the trading aspect of it where you're bartering with your opponents, trying to get things that you need, trying to keep them from getting things that they need. Mm-hmm. That's like the whole basis of that game. It's just trading. You don't have, there's no characters. There's no, the setting is just, it just feels like a, you know, fields with sheep and wood and wheat and just different things that you're trading and barter and ox. It's a great game. I love the game. It's a perfect game to get people into board games other than the more popular ones here. But there's no semblance of a story. But there was also no semblance of a story in Battleship, and they made that arguably work. I mean, they did come up with a story with
no argument here, my friend. I'm all for it. Battleship worked great.
No argument whatsoever.
But that's also Battleship. That is, I don't know where the aliens came from. Holy cow, Battleship was always just about naval warfare, and they included aliens in there somehow. But you throw something goofy like that into Catan, it's just not going to make a whole lot of sense. But I don't know. What are they going to do? Just like these dialogues between two people. Hey, I've got some wool. Would you like to give me your ox for it? I don't know. I'll give you three of these for two of those. That sounds like the most boring movie ever.
Well, you got to throw a quip in there at some point.
Yeah. You got to throw some, like, surf's up or something.
You got wood for my sheep?
Exactly. But bump. Psh.
I still never
I'll tell you what Catan, Settlers of Catan is all about. Settlers of Catan is all about a group of friends getting together, and then as the night progresses, it starts turning into an all-out fight where you hate each other, you don't want to talk to each other ever again, and then you all separate for a good month before you get together and hang out again.
No, that's Monopoly.
You haven't seen the way we play Settlers of Catan.
Monopoly, you know what? I'm getting tired of you bagging on Monopoly, Scott. It's a great game. Sorry, you're not good at it. That's the way I look at it.
Oh, I'm good at it.
Oh, are you? Because every time I hear you talk about it, you're like, I don't want to play Monopoly. I hate Monopoly.
Well, I got better things to do with my 6 hours.
Like what? Monopoly. Play a different game?
Yes.
Come on.
A better game.
Lord.
One with graphics and shit.
I'm not even talking about video games. I'm talking about there are so many tabletop board games out there that are vastly more interesting than Monopoly. They just have strategies and...
I would say Monopoly has a strategy, and if you say it that doesn't, you're doing it wrong.
There is barely a strategy in that. The majority of that game is based on luck, on a dice roll.
So bullshit. I will fight you with swords right now. No, it is not luck. You have to plan. You have to be strategic. You have to think. It is not luck.
I have to plan.
Luck.
I'm going
to
get double sixes on this roll. How am I going to do that?
Definitely somebody who's not good at Monopoly if he thinks that. Yeah.
So wait, can we go back to you want to fight him with swords? Is there like a level? Swords. So what's the lowest level of this you want to fight thing? Is it like I want to fight with mittens, and then it goes up from there?
I start with box of flies. I work up to mittens.
I think box of flies is above swords.
Is it? No.
Yes, it is.
Swords are sharp and pointy. Okay, I start. I end with box of flies, but box of bees is above that. Swords are below that. At some point, there's fire sticks. Yeah,
it's a fire stick.
That's a stick on fire, like a torch. It's a fire stick.
Or like it's like a glow. Why did you just say torch? Why did you say fire stick?
Glow light.
What are we? We cavemen? We're a fire stick.
That's how I fight. Fire sticks. Maybe bottom I'll roll line, some tires at you. I don't know.
This idea sounds horrible to me, a Settlers of Catan movie, but they somehow made a semblance of a story out of Battleship and made it moderately interesting. So I'll reserve judgment until I actually see a trailer or at least hear a plot line, because I don't know. That game is really popular. Like that is the – when you talk to people that play board games outside of the American ones, that's the one that most people know. It's – mm-hmm. One of the most famous tabletop board games out there. So they're going to get the name recognition for sure. I just don't know what they're going to do with the story.
All right, well, we'll find out. Because board games made into movies has worked great financially so far.
What other ones have there been besides Battleship?
Clue.
Was that more of a
home viewing success than theater?
I can't think of any other. Have there been any other ones? I mean, I'm sure there are. I mean, this stuff never works. Let's be honest. It hardly ever works. Clue was amazing. And you know why? Because they made it something completely different than what the game is, really. Which is why it worked so well. It almost made it absurd.
It was absurd.
Brought
it. So was Battleship.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. All right. You know what? Find Tim Curry. If you can put him in Settlers of Catan, I think it'll be a great movie. That's how it works.
Tim Curry makes everything
better. I
want to
hear that dialogue right now.
He does make everything better.
Yeah.
Now, please share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter. You can follow us at Buy Popcorn, Reddit, whatever it is you use. Please share the show. We do appreciate it. Also, we don't normally publicize other people's work on our podcast, and neither of these listeners are paying us to do so. But Dan Portnoy is a longtime listener who just put together his first short. It's on YouTube, and it's called Carpool, so please check that out. And Peter Germany, longtime listener and a writer, who just published published an anthology called Sparks from Berdizzo Books, which is now available on Amazon. And I wanted to point this out because all proceeds from sales of that book go to Resources for Autism.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool deal. Again, the book is called Sparks. So if you could check both those things out for our listeners, that would be great. Do appreciate it. Time for our From the Outside In topic, guys. Are you ready for some fan theories?
Oh, yeah.
You better fix that before my mom gets home. The Dan Cook flashback, sorry. The best fan theories of movies and TV, and what we're going to talk about first is how do you feel about fan theories? And fan theories are basically, for those that aren't aware of this concept, whenever something's cool happened on a TV show or movie and fans speculate how things are connected or what could be happening.
Also known as Beyond Westworld.
Yeah, also known as Beyond Westworld. What do you think about fan theories, John?
You know, I used to really love fan theories and get really into the idea. You know, and getting with a group of friends and talking about what might be going on used to be a lot of fun for me. But ever since the ending of Lost and I saw what kind of reaction that had on Lost, because we all know Lost ended and it had a huge backlash to what happened. I think a lot of that is because the fan theories that everyone came up with were either A, not solved, or B, nowhere near what people wanted. And the creators of that show lost control of everything and lost ownership of it, and it became more about what the fans wanted. And that's why I think that show got a huge backlash. So because of that, it makes it hard for me to enjoy getting into things where people are talking about theories of it, because I realize that the creators have their story they want to tell me. And before I start coming up with anything, I want to know what their story is from beginning to end, and then start looking at what kind of theories are out there.
I feel just the opposite. I love fan theories. Now, I am speaking opposite of you this time, right?
Yes, this time you are.
I did understand you correctly. Okay. I love when a show gets people talking about the show on a deeper level. I mentioned Beyond Westworld. I was obsessed listening to Aaron and Troy talk about that show because I was so into that show, and I loved listening to them come up with ideas. I would listen to it. I'd go back and watch the show. I would come up with my own ideas. I would write to them and talk to them and talk to my friends about it. It makes watching a television show a social experience instead of just a sitting at my home watching it by myself experience. And that gets me going. When I can take something like a TV show or a movie and then get into it and talk with someone else about it, that's the part I love. That's why we do this podcast, guys. I mean, that's not necessarily for fan theories, but we want someone to talk to about it. It reminds me of growing up as a kid and getting on the school bus and talking to my friends about what we watched that night or that weekend or whatever. And did you see this? And sharing funny moments, and it's great. Fan theories do that, and I just feel like when people have these fan theories and get so obsessed with it, and it just shows that these people have such a love for that show, it's got to make those TV show makers and filmmakers just feel amazing. Somebody likes this that much that they're coming up with their own ideas for it.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. They do. I absolutely love fan theories. I host two TV-related podcasts, Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld, and easily the best part of that, of doing those, is hearing the crazy things people come up with when they overanalyze what's going on in a movie or a show. And from talking to showrunners, they love it. They absolutely love it. I mean, the whole reason that they're doing it is to spawn interest, and obviously for ratings, but also get people talking about it. And the more theories there are, the more people are talking about shows and movies. And it just creates a great interest in whatever you're talking about. The thing I don't love is when people try to poo-poo other people's theories, because unless you can prove that it's not true.
Oh, really? Oh, really? That's how you feel?
Well, unless it's like a weird one like Troy's. But I mean, typically, yeah, I don't like it. And that's mostly in good fun. Mostly in good fun when I poo-poo. He thinks Red Reddington is Liz's mom, if you ever watched Blacklist. It's weird.
That's the one I really want to happen, by the way.
That's the one everybody that listens wants to happen.
They just want Troy to be right for once.
Yeah, for once, right? It's like, poor guy. Never happens for him. I think whenever people do that, I'm like, hey, man, unless you can prove that it didn't happen, just ride with it. You know, stay out of the conversation if you don't like it. I don't understand when people get so bad. That's not possible. Okay. Cool. Very, very cool. Like, there were not to reuse Blacklist, but there were some people who thought that Red Reddington and Liz Keene, who are the main characters, were maybe there was a romantic affection where most people thought it was a father-daughter thing. So for a long time, like anybody who would say anything about the romantic connection would just get blasted on the internet. Just mean stuff about how awful it is to say that, and it's just they're stupid and just name calling. I hate that part of it. But the majority of the fan community are full of wonderful people, and their theories are freaking fantastic.
That's how I felt about Westworld too. People came up with things that I never even considered and just made me think about it. I love shows that make me think, and force me to kind of think outside the box a little bit. And fan theories do that, especially when you come across something that just seems like it is so far out of left field. But then when you think about it and you look at evidence from the show or just little Easter eggs, if they're there, if they're put there intentionally, that just is so much fun. The discussion and the digging deeper is just a blast.
Well, Lost was that way too. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that was a big portion. And I get what you're saying, John, like why some people were disappointed because their theories never came true, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But one of the best things about that show being on was all the speculation, episode to episode, season to season, about where everything was going.
Well, yeah, that's why I got sucked in.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest – and those shows that can do that, they can cultivate that fan excitement, that fan vigor – that's phenomenal to me. It's just – it's a phenomenal thing to watch and behold. And now there's so many shows doing that are, you know, so serialized and everything else, so they kind of capture that excitement. I just love it. It's like a great time to be a fan. You know, back when we were kids, it was like Magnum P.I. was over and that was it. Solved. Case solved.
Talk to your dad about it?
Yeah. Well, not me because my dad wasn't around.
Oh, boy. Talk to your mom about it?
Yeah, I would talk to mom. She would listen to me. So let's talk about some of your favorite ones. What are some of your favorite fan theories, movies, TV, it doesn't matter, that you maybe actually wanted to happen even?
Well, it didn't happen. This is one that's really ridiculous, but I just secretly really want it to be true. And it's a pretty popular one that people talk about a lot. But there's a rumor or fan theory that Breaking Bad was actually a prequel to The Walking Dead. Because they're both AMC shows, and you know the idea is that something goes wrong with a bad batch of meth, and then that's what caused the first zombie apocalypse in Walking Dead. I don't know. I just love that idea, and I would love to see that connection, just because it's two shows that I really liked a lot. Either that or Walter's character being the same character from Malcolm in the Middle, which is again is so preposterous, but it would just be so much fun to find out that this crazy guy kind of matured a little bit, grew up, became a chemistry teacher, and then it all went from there. I just love that idea.
I think if you look back at Walking Dead, Merle's stash actually looked like blue meth or something, if I remember right.
Yeah, that's actually true. And I think recently Kirkman came out and said that there's a possibility that might be true too. The one that I read recently that I thought was hysterical about Malcolm in the Middle and Breaking Bad was that Walter White was actually Malcolm grown up, and he had to change his name to Walter White to get away from his psychotic brothers who were like nearly killing him at every single turn.
That would make sense why he looks like his dad.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. Not See, I love idea. When people even came up with that. Like somebody was just sitting around and connected that dot, and I just find that fascinating. Scott or John, what about you? Do you have a favorite? We'll just round robin it. You have a favorite fan theory?
What one that I stumbled across that when I think about it even more. Now again, I wasn't that big of a fan of the show, but I did watch a few episodes of it. And thinking of it from this lens, I would watch a whole lot more episodes. But in Friends, the Friends are actually a hallucination of Phoebe, and Phoebe is actually a homeless girl who watches these five people from the street in this coffee shop, and then she imagines herself as being part of this group of friends.
What?
And
That's amazing.
It's amazing. And then the whole idea ends with the series ending with her walking up to the fountain that has these six discarded umbrellas and an old rotted out couch, and that's where she goes and she takes a hit of meth, and the "I'll be there for you" is actually the meth
speaking to her.
Yep.
Holy sh! That took a turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. That got really dark, didn't it?
Yeah, but it's way better than anything that ever actually happened on Friends, so I like it. I'm a big fan.
Between that and my theory about Ross, did I say he killed his son, or his son died and was resentful? Remember that one when we talked about?
Yeah.
We're just going to turn Friends into not a comedy anymore. It's just a...
I didn't really laugh much, so... You know, wow. Oh, I said it. Yeah, that's right, America. One of my personal favorites is Kill Bill. Where
I didn't like this one.
Oh, I love this one, dude. It's been that way since I saw Kill Bill. Honestly, it's where the one where Kill Bill's actually Fox Force 5 that Mia Wallace is talking about when she's having dinner with Vincent Vega in Pulp Fiction. So in Kill Bill, it's actually Mia Wallace playing the bride. Because she said she once filmed the TV pilot called Fox Force 5 about an all-woman team of special agents. And, you know, she's part of that cast. And so that's basically the Deadly Viper assassination squad from Kill Bill. Except Mia Wallace plays the blonde leader. I think that's a great theory. Why don't you like it?
Oh, that's not the one I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to say the one where Bill doesn't actually die at the end of Volume 2.
Mm-mm. And it's I don't like that one.
Oh yeah, that's the one I didn't like. I like that one about Mia being the bride. That's interesting.
Yeah, I love that one with Mia being the bride. That sounds amazing.
Isn't it cool? I think it's really cool. Yeah. Yeah, fans, thanks. Now, Tarantino, let's make a connection movie. Let's do something else. Let's do Kill Bill 3, where the daughter comes back. You know what I'm saying? Let's do that.
Mm-hmm. Or Kill Fiction Volume 4. I don't know. Put them together.
What? Kill Fiction Pulp Volume Bill? 4. What about you, Scott? You got another one?
I have another one. It's probably a pretty popular one, but I had never read it until doing some research for this. Have you guys heard about the fan theory about Titanic and Jack actually being a time traveler?
Yep.
I have not.
This was kind of fascinating because I was like, come on. That's a great movie. Titanic is awesome. Very serious movie. There's no element of sci-fi in this whatsoever, but I read it, and here's what it is. The theory is that Jack is a time traveler sent back to go on the Titanic to save Rose from committing suicide. Because the theory is, if Rose had committed suicide by jumping off the back of the boat at the beginning of the movie, the entire course of that ship would have been altered because they would have stopped for a while. They would have, you know, taken care of this. They might have been turned back to wherever, to where they go. Were they in England when they left? Yeah. And then in turn would have never hit that iceberg, would have made it to America without any problems. So while on the surface, that sounds like a ridiculous claim, here are some of the clues about this. If you remember during that scene when he's trying to talk her out of jumping into the water, he's talking about how cold it is and he's been to Wisconsin and there's this lake in Wisconsin where he felt like needles and everything on his body. So some people have figured out that the lake he's talking about is actually a man-made lake, and that lake wouldn't have been built for another 5 years in history when the Titanic sunk. Not only that, but he talks about taking her for a ride on a Ferris wheel somewhere. That Ferris wheel wouldn't have been built for another 4 years. And then on top of that, his clothes and his hairstyle that he was wearing in the film weren't of the time for that. It would have been more like 6 to 10 years after this time period. So
interesting.
So they're just tiny little clues that may have been accidental, inadvertent, but it's kind of like, that's an interesting theory. I don't know if I love it. But it's fun to think about. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It does. Oh, absolutely.
So yeah, I thought that was interesting. I had never heard that one before. John, had?
Never heard that. I have, and I love it because it makes the movie kind of make more sense to me. And this whole—
What?
Well, yeah, especially Jack dying at the end, or quote-unquote dying on the end. Who knows?
It makes the movie make more sense. Like, yeah, it's for based sure. on a true story, dumbass. What more sense does it need to make?
Well,
What?
No, I understand. I think I understand what he's saying. He's talking about like it felt like a futile.
Don't you support him?
His death seemed like an unnecessary event.
Right. His death seemed unnecessary because I think Scott, we've heard Aaron go on and on about how there's plenty of room on that stupid freaking door for both of them.
And they could have taken turns.
They could have taken turns or something like that. I think this was him dropping down to his death was his way of correcting the timeline. And that's, you know, that's how he re-entered his own timeline or exited this timeline.
Here's the thing I don't get. Like, what's the purpose? What's his purpose to save her? He basically saved one person to kill thousands of others. And then himself.
Well, it's possible that maybe it's something along the lines of she wasn't ever supposed to be on the boat to begin with. And then something happened where she ended up being on the boat. And because of that one person, somebody had to be sent back to fix the timeline.
So she's John Connor.
Basically.
Okay.
Yeah, see, that's the problem I have with this theory is it takes into account facts, not in evidence. I mean, most theories take everything up to that point and then expound off it or they connect it in some weird way. That one's just like making stuff up to a degree.
Well, to a degree.
But how do you explain those? Obviously, it's just like an error in the movie or the research wasn't correct.
How do I explain him dying? She's greedy and selfish.
I'm talking about the – well, yeah. No, I mean, how do you explain the him talking about places that don't exist, or amusement rides that don't exist, or hairstyles and clothes that don't exist yet, unless he came from the future?
Bad writing? I don't know.
Well, that's,
I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
We're chalking it up to that. But if you're looking at the movie as a story and not as something written by another human that has error, that's what I mean.
John, I'm sorry I called your name. I don't want you drowning me in the Titanic waters.
Oh, so. It's going to happen.
Okay.
Just let go.
Lord. All right, Johnny, next to you.
All right, so we – I don't know if you guys have heard this, but Vin Diesel is actually a huge Dungeons & Dragons fan.
Yes.
So there is a big fan theory out there that the Fast and the Furious series is actually a modded out Dungeons & Dragons campaign. And it's – it's the only way they explain why after each and every movie they get more and more powerful, they get crazier and crazier.
They're leveling up.
Tej goes from being a street mechanic to being a full-fledged hacker all of a sudden. Come on. All these different things, it's the only thing that makes sense. That's why there's always some big bad machine that they got to fight against later on, is because they're leveling up in the series and in the campaign.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
If you roll a 6 or higher, you get a +1 in family.
Was that yours? Like, did you just make that up on the spot? I've never heard that.
No, I actually hunted that one down and found it. I had heard it before, and I wanted to make sure that I got it right. But yeah, I did not make that up. But
you think about that, that makes sense. Like, they come up against The Rock, who's like their enemy, this big hulking dude. They have to fight him. And he winds up joining the clan to go, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, that just sounds like a D&D kind of thing. That's fantastic.
Yeah, cars don't fly.
Totally sounds like John, like a John idea. I mean, it's that kind of bonkers. I like it.
No, there's no box of flies. So,
Man. You guys heard the Ferris Bueller one. This is pretty common knowledge, but have you ever heard the Ferris Bueller?
I've heard a couple. I'm not sure. I guessed the one you were going to do earlier wrong. So I'm going to hold up until you tell us.
Well, the one where Ferris Bueller is actually Cameron's imaginary friend, and that Cameron is imagining everything that happens,
right,
like the entire day, all the interactions that take place between Cameron and Ferris and Sloan happen in his mind after he skips school, and then he drives into the city in a kind of a fugue state. All builds up to him taking his like anger out on the Ferrari and finally getting the courage to stand up to his father. I think that's a really cool theory. It's absurd, but it's a cool theory.
Is Sloan imaginary as well then?
I mean, yeah. I've imagined her plenty of times when I was his age. Yes.
No, I understand that. I just meant like it wasn't him and Sloan going in. They weren't friends. He was imagining both of them.
Well, he's a gentleman. I mean, really. So he imagined his imaginary friend got the girl because he's a hero.
Really? So why couldn't he imagine up his own girlfriend?
Maybe he's more in himself than just eye candy. You know what I mean? I mean, he thinks he's better than just somebody's guy.
Hmm.
No.
You got me really thinking about this. Why would he imagine up a girlfriend versus for his imaginary friend? And I think part of that is because Sloan had her own hand in this whole deal too. So whereas Ferris is pushing him to do more and do crazier things, Sloan is the one who's making him more comfortable at it, I think.
Hmm. She does sweet words. Yeah, a lot of sweet words to Cameron. Pushes him in the right direction, keeps him motivated. Good back of the – good psyche voice.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
I like it.
Any more from either one of you guys?
That's it for me.
I got one for Aladdin. You guys ready for this one?
Yes.
Okay. So there is a theory that Aladdin actually takes place 10,000 years in the future, and it's actually a post-apocalyptic – kind of world where you have talking monkeys that are actually mutants. The genie.
I see where this is going.
The genie, and that's the reason why, like, when the genie pops out, he actually says 10,000 years he's been waiting in that for somebody to rub the lamp, and for him to be actually spouting off all these different like references to the 80s and early 90s is the only way it makes sense. That the last time he was let out of his lamp was 1990s, and he also mentions how Aladdin's wearing that that Fez, and he says, you know what? That's so third century. So there's a lot of hints at time that tell you that the genie has been around for a lot longer than we expected. And this is actually the year like 11992.
Hmm.
Because how could he make references to something that hasn't happened yet if it took place in the past?
Right.
Bum, bum, bum.
And if we're post-apocalyptic, Aladdin would never have heard about it because the world, like, rebooted and all that pop culture stuff has been out of the timeline for forever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about mutant monkeys, though. That you shouldn't have led with that.
No way. Well, that's got me interested. That was a good starting point for me.
Yeah, Abu was a talking monkey.
Yeah.
He really, you can say that he squeaked and everything, but he was talking.
He was communicating.
Was Andy Serkis in this movie?
I was going to say.
No! Well, I got two other ones that I'm a really big fan of. One, in Skyfall, where Silva, he goes to a lot of great lengths to kind of destroy everything that M loves. And even calls her mommy at one point. One of the big theories is that maybe he's actually her son.
Hmm.
Which plays into that one. The other one is in Terminator. Because a lot of people are like, why
did he call her mom or did he call her marm?
Mommy. It says mommy in one place.
Not marmy?
No. What the hell is marmy?
I don't know.
Marnie is something completely different.
He had a lisp, Scott. Now you're making fun of a man with a lisp.
He didn't have any teeth in his mouth, I don't think, at that time.
No, I've had this discussion with my wife when we watch shows and that are where you're talking about people that speak with British accents or it takes place in England, and they say marm, and she's like, why is he calling her mom? I'm like, no, it's marm is like a way we say ma'am.
No, it's mommy. It's definitely mommy.
All right. It's been a while.
Let's go to the tape. You know, here'd be a great place for Scott to splice in a clip from Skyfall.
I will do that.
Exactly. All right. Well, maybe in my other one is in Terminator, that they're always chasing John Connor and they can't see him even when they, you know, they're always coming back to get him. One of the big theories is that the machines don't simply eradicate us. Like they could just drop nukes and wipe out all the people, right? We'd be done. But they don't because they want to keep us around in some form. So they have a purpose.
Thinking like Matrix style, like we're going to be batteries for them.
No, more so that you have to give the Terminator something to do because once they're done being Terminators for the human beings, what are they going to terminate next?
Hmm.
And the machines.
So we're keeping machines from being bored. Just give them an Xbox.
They don't have Settlers of Catan, so they got nothing to do. So they got People of Catan.
I'm picturing like three or four Terminators just sitting around crisscross applesauce around a table playing Settlers of Catan.
Runners of Connor, something. I don't know.
Runners of Connor.
Shut up. It worked in my head. Any awful fan theories that really stand out to you as thank God that never happened?
The one that stands out to me the most is that Jar Jar Binks is a Sith Lord.
Yes.
I you know what? I understand where people are coming from with it. Like the whole idea that his clumsiness is actually a way for him to cover up. And how does he know that people are coming and all these other things? And his own people are kind of scared of him, which has more to do with him being clumsy. But a reason why I don't like this is because it's very much somebody who's trying to convince themselves that he was a good idea.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Yep, that's exactly. I agree.
But I also, because I've read that theory, and I've actually watched like a 12-minute video on someone trying to sell me on that. And it was fascinating just how in detail it went, because it has to do with a lot of the way that like he jumps into the water at the beginning of episode one. It's very Sith looking, you know what I mean? Like the way he kind of just moves. But I'm with you. I think it just sounds like an excuse. Or if it were true and that was what George Lucas's original vision was, and then episode one came out and everyone just hated Jar Jar so much and he's like, well, can't do that anymore. So it just kind of went with him being like the reason everything went to crap in those movies.
It's a lot of that is possible. I really think they had a bigger plan for him, and I think Lucas was all on board Jar Jar. I actually pictured him after the opening and after the critical reception, the fan reception, just sitting in a room, a dark, dark, dark closet-like room, looking at nothing but darkness, crying in his own hands.
Anger
and realizing
leads to hate.
Realizing that Jar Jar is not going to be a thing. I made all those toys. You know,
do you know what they wound up doing, like as far as canon with Jar Jar, how he ended up? Have you,
no.
Like,
no.
Like in the actual books or whatever is considered canon by Disney or whomever is in charge of all that now, like he wound up on some planet as basically a jester. Like he's basically a clown for whatever planet he's living on now. He's just an outcast and everybody makes fun of him and everything. That's like how he actually ends up after all it's over.
That's kind of mean.
Yeah.
Man, now I'm feeling bad for Jar Jar. Bring him back. Come on, no. Abrams.
Could you imagine?
Put him in episode whatever.
People would get so mad.
Do it. And he shows up like wearing Darth Maul's makeup. Misa gonna kill you.
Oh my god. Darth Maul's makeup all over Jar Jar's face. What do you do with the ears?
Misa gonna die.
Oh my goodness.
I'm actually too frightened to laugh at any of this.
I would watch the shit out of that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
that would be like the ultimate Abrams, like, screw you. All right, all the people giving me grief after I made your fancy Star Wars movie. I'm coming back. Yeah, I'm going to give you something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Abrams, thank you, JJ, for making the best Star Wars movie that we've ever had in a long time. Oh, now we don't want him to direct a movie. Yeah, you don't want me to direct a movie? Well, here's Jar Jar.
That would actually be kind of awesome.
I literally just said that.
I said it better.
All right. Scott, what about you? Any really bad ones?
I got a couple. And my first is one that I read and I just went, what? It just makes me angry. Home Alone. There's a scene where
this one, right? Yeah.
John Candy shows up and gives Kate McAllister a ride. What even kind of music was it? I don't remember. Polka band.
Polka band. It was a polka king.
He was a polka king of the Midwest or something. And yeah. Gives him a ride and whatever. But the theory is that John Candy is the devil. Because right before she meets John Candy's character, she says something to the effect of that she would sell her soul to the devil in order to get home or whatever. And then John Candy shows up. And the clues that they give for that are, number one, one of the very first lines that he says to her is, "Please allow me to introduce myself." Which, if you know the
Rolling Stones
song, it's called Sympathy for the Devil, which starts out with that exact phrase, like verbatim. And then also, if you guys remember in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, there was a bit where he played the devil or something like that. I don't remember that. I just read about it.
Yeah, there's a part where Steve Martin's half asleep in the car and
he's like dreaming it.
There's a car accident and he looks over and there's flames on either side of the car and you see John Candy dressed up like the devil with the old school like red suit and horns and all that
right.
jazz.
Cause that supports this theory somehow. I don't know. I just, it just drives me crazy because John Candy, you know, rest his soul or whatever. He's just,
or whatever. That's a way to finish that off.
I'm so disgusted with this theory because
I'm so disgusted with your or whatever. My God.
No, it just drives me crazy. Why can't you just have a nice guy? Like what could possibly, if he were the devil, what would be his purpose in taking her home? Because apparently part of the theory is also that the devil likes woodwind instruments, which I grew up in a pretty religious school and learned all kinds of things about religion. I don't remember ever hearing about the devil playing clarinet, but that's the thing. So he's just a nice guy. He's just offering someone a ride home. He overheard her plight and was just a genuinely nice guy. Why can't we just have a nice guy character that's doing it because he's nice with no ulterior motive? Just drove me crazy.
That's not.
Are you sure he's nice though?
Yeah. Are you sure?
Am I sure
that he's nice?
Well, I mean, according to the movie, he's nice. What did he do that wasn't nice?
John's asking.
I just want to see how many more times we can get you to say that he was a nice guy.
He's a nice guy.
Somebody nice identifies man. With John Candy is what I'm guessing. that's not the theory I heard, though. The theory I heard was that Kevin McAllister from Home Alone was the origin story for John Kramer in Saw.
Hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah. You know, like setting all the traps and has no problem getting a little crazy with the violence. Yeah. That was an interesting
just
one.
Just picturing Jigsaw going, "I'm up here, you jerks."
Do you want to play up here? I don't know why I sounded like Pennywise when I did that. what about you, Scott? You had another one?
I do. The Willy Wonka theory really pisses me off about where he's – he knows that the kids are gonna be picked off one by one. That to me is obvious, yes. But the theory is that his intention was to make candy out of these kids. So when they go through all this stuff, that he's actually grinding them up and putting them into the chocolate. And that is just beyond disturbing. Yes, I understand there are disturbing moments in that film, especially in the tunnel, mm-hmm. which I don't know how that made it into a kids movie. Could you imagine that being in a kids movie today? Like I just feel like a lot of parents would freak out. And yeah.
A lot of parents did freak out back then.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
I just Wasn't he eating them?
He was eating them, right?
I mean, that's part of the theory. Yeah, he's putting the candy and eating them, and then selling it back to the people too.
I believe that theory.
Yeah, I actually buy it because part of the theory is like, why else would he get rid of every human he could and just only have these race of little monsters running around helping him?
He killed them. Totally killed them.
Right.
Sorry, buddy. He killed them. I mean, I know you identify with him because he's a nice guy and all.
He didn't kill them, though. They all lived.
Oh, did they? Or were they figments of his imagination? That's what wow. I'm going with.
Aaron just broke out in the song.
I sure did. Battlestar Galactica, one of my favorites. This favorite awful theories. Like, I think his theory is awful, but I kind of like it in a way. And that's that somebody thinks that all, because all the Cylons either had Cylon sex or were involved with someone who did have Cylon sex, they actually think that being a Cylon could be transmitted like an STD.
Yeah.
Like, you can catch a little Cylon.
Is it that, like, the STD actually infects them, or that they get impregnated with a half-human, half-Cylon?
No, like, they get infected with nanobites. They start turning their body into Cylons.
Yeah, okay. Cylonitis. Cylonorrhea.
Cylonorrhea.
Cylonerpes. I don't know how you say that real fast three times. There's all kinds of them. That's what I'm going with. Any other bad ones? God, I feel like I'm... just blew that.
I kind of like this one and don't like it at the same time. So in Jurassic Park, the snarky little kid that's giving Sam Neill's Dr. Grant a hard time about velociraptors, mm-hmm. in which Sam Neill then turns around and scares the crap out of the kid. That kid is Owen, Chris Pratt's character in Jurassic World.
I love that theory.
Because he's grows up to become who he is because of that moment taught him to respect and have care for what velociraptors are.
You don't like that theory?
I like it, but what I don't like about it is that it makes the world too connecty-connecty, and we don't need too that much connectedness in the world.
All right. Well, let's go to some of our listener picks. All of our listeners post their thoughts in our Facebook group. We put the topic up each week. If you want to go to The Hollywood Outsider in our Facebook group, we have some listener picks. We each pick three. So, Scott, you go first.
All right. The first one comes from Tori Melching. She says, two that come to mind, both from Toy Stories. The first is Sid grows up to be a garbage man to save broken toys. I think in three, there is a shot of a garbage man that could have been Sid. And this is actually, there's a shot of a garbage man that's wearing the same t-shirt that Sid was wearing from the first Toy Story movie. So that one, I feel like it's kind of valid, although it's not the only t-shirt in the world, but mm-hmm. I do like that one. She also said her second one is that Jesse's original owner was in fact Emily, Andy's mom, which is weird because would that make Woody like a hand-me-down toy then? Because they're from the same toy collection, yeah, same
that's
era.
Oh, my brain is hurting from thinking. I don't know. That's a good question. That's a really good question.
I mean, I'm thinking of it from that there's like thousands and millions of these different sets of toys. So it's not that Jesse matches up with that Woody. It was a different Jesse that his mom had. Her mom had the whole set, but only passed down Woody to Andy. Because why would he want the girl cowboy? I'm assuming his gender, apparently.
What's your next one? There's a lot of explanation there, Scott.
The next one comes from Sherry Odom. She says, I had my own fan theory about How I Met Your Mother. On the last episode, they would show Bob Saget behind the desk talking to the kids, and the mom, not Robin, would open the door and say, really, honey, shut up and let's eat dinner. And I picked this one because I really wanted this to happen, not verbatim, but I really wanted Bob Saget to be behind that desk instead of Josh Radnor. John, were you with me?
No, I'm actually not. I after watching it this rewatch, I just did with it. I appreciate the show a lot more for how it ended and why it ended the way it did.
Oh, I do too.
So I'm I'm okay. I've healed from the damage it did to me the first time around, and I appreciate it a lot more. I think it's the only way the story works now is the way it ended.
No, I'm with you on that. I'm not talking about her saying that the mom comes in and does that. I'm just talking about the sheer fact that Josh Radnor is supposed to be old Ted from like 2027 or whatever the year that show ends in.
Like I'm fine with that.
I always wanted it to actually be Bob Saget, because it doesn't make any sense that he's telling this story and all of a sudden his voice changes from Bob Saget's to Josh Radnor's in the final episode.
Right.
To me, it's thinking too much about it.
Okay.
We've associated the voice of Bob Saget for this whole time, but we've also associated Ted himself. And it was 9 years. I mean, we're okay with letting it finish the way it is, with it being Josh Radnor. He kind of earned that right.
Okay. My last one comes from Adam Schreiber, and he says, the bride in Kill Bill doesn't actually kill Bill. He is faking, which would have set up Kill Bill 3, where Bill does a reverse bride and is alive hunting her. The only reason I could see that being cool for me, personally, this is me speaking, by the way, is just to see more Kill Bill, but I kind of like how that story wrapped up, so...
Didn't,
I don't know.
Yeah, didn't you say earlier you didn't like that theory?
I didn't.
Well, then why'd you pick it?
Because it's interesting, and you guys took all the other ones.
Okay. All right. Is that it on yours, or did you have
any
more?
That's my third one.
Amy Hutchison, as far as I know, this is never confirmed to be true, so I'm going with it. My favorite fan theory is about Lord of the Rings. The theory goes that Gandalf meant to use the Eagles at a much earlier date, not to save Frodo and Sam from Mordor. Yeah. Now, his plan was to use the Eagles to fly the Fellowship to Mordor after they crossed the Misty Mountains. But the only safe passage across the mountains was through the mines of Moria. As we know, once they were nearly out of the mines, they come across the Balrog that takes out Gandalf. Because none of the rest of the Fellowship knew his plan, they didn't know how to rendezvous with the Eagles, and they had to see Galadriel. I always say that wrong. Instead. What makes this even more interesting is that just before Gandalf is pulled down by the Balrog, he says, "Fly, you fools," which everyone interprets to mean run, but Gandalf is actually trying to tell them to fly the rest of the way.
And that was the best explanation you could come up with on the fly? Not like, hey, I got some birds, go get them? Or why didn't he have them fly the birds before they went in the mountain?
Or why didn't he bring that up? Hey, Frodo. Guess heads up, guy.
Yeah,
all right, so once we get across here, there's going to be some birds, and you're going to want to hop on their backs and take that ring, because seriously, otherwise it's a lot of walking.
And those little hobbit feet are going to get sore, especially with no shoes on.
Yep. I love that theory, though, because it explains the number one fan concern, which is why wouldn't they take the Eagles to begin with? It would have saved so much of Peter Jackson in our time.
Or just give them a heads up. Here's the plan, guys.
He fell for a long time. Like, he had a while. He could have said a lot of stuff. He could have said, all right, when I was 8, I had a problem
also,
with the neighbor kid.
He comes back as the White Wizard, right?
Yeah,
White Gandalf?
White Gandalf.
White, whatever it is. It's Gandalf been a long time.
Yes, yeah, so Gandalf back as Gandalf the White.
Okay,
yeah.
I was in the ballpark. But they weren't at the mountain at that point. Still, they still had a ways to go. Couldn't he have told them then? Hey, yeah. I forgot to mention one thing while I was falling to my death. There's some eagles.
You guys didn't hear. I said go to the Eagles. Why are you still here?
I said fly, you fools.
God, you guys, I got to explain everything in detail, man. I don't have time. I'm a dumb hobbit.
All right. Why can't you just take my meaning? Just take my meaning, damn it.
Exactly.
That's all I ask.
All right, well, Troy Heinrichs, old Troy. I have to read his. I'm sorry. When Lost ended, a fan theory was going around that since the property was on ABC, owned by Disney, and very popular still, that they were going to completely renovate the Tom Sawyer Island attraction in the Magic Kingdom to be a full interactive Lost experience. It was to have the Swan, where you could push the button, the Others Village, the station with the Nigerian plane, and a beach camp. Sadly, since the attraction always moved, no one was ever able to locate it. Think about it. Since the attraction always moved, the island always moved. The island actually in the show. I thought it was clever. Sorry, you guys didn't get it. Troy, I'm with you, man. I feel you. Kyle Nolan Also wanted to point out that Red Reddington might be Katerina Rostova is one of his favorite theories. And since Troy commented, I felt like I have to say that again. He feels that Jane Spader's a lady. Dude looks like a lady. Nate Bruce, a theory I had was in Temple of Doom, Indy wasn't the hero, but Short Round was. What? He breaks the spell of the Kali with a torch and saves him from the stabbing voodoo doll, which leads to the Maharaja calling the British army. You are right, sir. You have sold me.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll buy that for a dollar.
And I don't know if he's really the hero because he stopped Indiana Jones like no time for love. He was right there and like buzzkill. All right. Who is next? I think, John, you're last. Let's go.
I am last. Will McGee, my least favorites are the ones, is the one where all the Rugrats died in incredibly horrific ways, and Angelica is just imagining the other babies. Actually, my least favorite is any theory that forces any likewise unnecessarily dark or edgy theory on a much lighter show. I would tend to agree with that. However, though I pulled one out for Friends, I thought it was fitting and good, and I liked it a lot, and I couldn't help but use it.
Mm-hmm.
So there. That's Ty Nelson. I'm going to cheat and have a list here. Number one, James Bond is a code name given to every agent that uses the 007 title. You guys have any thoughts on this?
No, I actually agree with it. I think that's a great theory. It explains why they always look so different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd actually go with that too.
Well, and plus you never get a backstory. You don't really have an origin story. I think you get one in Skyfall a little bit, but they've always kept his history very bland. So it very simply could just be that James Bond is just the name. Code name.
Yeah. Code name. Number two, the Fury Road Mad Max was actually the feral kid from the Road Warrior.
I like
that one. There's also another one where people are talking about how the Road Warrior or Mad Max is actually one of the four horsemen where he's actually Death. And then the guy who was – all the guys were chasing him were Pestilence and whatever else. You know, there's that theory too.
Right.
Okay. And here comes Aaron's – Ferris Bueller's Day Off is an imaginary tale that Cameron creates that day while laying sick in bed to psych himself up to confront his father.
Yeah. I screwed that up because I actually yell at these guys to make sure you read the comments.
I was just going
to
say that.
I'm going to own it. I'm owning up to it. So – and I gave Scott a lot of crap when he did it like a couple weeks ago, so I have to accept that I screwed that up.
Yeah. So I just realized where I read the one about Malcolm in the Middle growing up into becoming Walter White, and it was here. Mm-hmm. bonus one, Malcolm from Malcolm in the Middle grows up to look like his father and changes his name to Walter White to escape his dangerous brother, Reese. His crazy childhood was the source of his ruthlessness.
Yeah, so we're all screwing things up. Great job, guys.
I didn't give like that theory. I gave the theory about Walking Dead and about him actually being Walter White. So I didn't do anything about him being his son. Just saying. Lawyered. Well,
I'm going to toss in Will Ross's theory that all the Pixar movies are connected.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool one too.
Yeah,
well, you see little remnants of things like you'll see Buddy. Woody and Buzz, I just combined those together.
You like sure that? Did. Yeah.
Woody and Buzz, you see in other things. I actually like that theory a lot.
I do too. Well, thanks, guys. Mm-hmm. That was a really, really fun topic. I hope everybody enjoyed it. I hope you've got some fan theories of your own. If you want to share them, feel free to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com or go on the Facebook group. Share them there. We always put the posts there in the Facebook group, or you can do it on Twitter and just hit us up and let us know what your favorite fan theories are. I want to, before we get to what's this movie, I want to take a second and extend our thank you to our Patreon supporters who graciously donated at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Supporting The Hollywood Outsider does help pay for our expenses for your favorite podcast. When we do this show well, when we do it not so well, it still helps pay the bills, so we appreciate it. Web hosting, apps, podcast production support, it all costs money. And not only do you keep our show going, you actually get something for your efforts. So if you support the whole with $5 a month, just $5 a month, you receive two bonus episodes a month. And our October bonus episode is up right now, and our latest bad movie night will drop at the end of the month. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, and thank you to everybody that does support us. Scotty?
All right, we're going to go to our Ho game or feature, and this week is back to What's This Movie. Each week we pick a movie suggested by either a host or a listener. The person has the option to either play a clip, offer you a What Am I, a riddle, limerick, haiku, or they could even reenact a famous quote from their movie. If you think you know what the movie is, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com or through the contact tab in the app, and we'll give you a proper ho shout out on the next episode. Last week's game was Say It Like It Is, and only one person guessed any of them correctly, and that was Tori Melching. So congratulations, Tori. You are the big winner.
What was everybody's movie? Scott never answered. John, what was your movie last week?
Army of Darkness.
Mine was Jurassic Park.
Mine was, it had something to do with...
was it Breakfast Club?
No, I said something about participation. Oh, it was Rudy.
Rudy. Okay.
This week, it is my turn to confuse everybody, and I've got an audio clip from a movie, and here is your clue.
Nenge Yomboko from Cameroon. Do you remember me? It's Lionel Joseph.
Lionel! From the African Education Conference, right?
Yes, Simon. I was director of cultural events at the Haile Selassie Pavilion.
I remember the pavilion. We had big fun there.
Bukwele, 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 ha! Bukwele, 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 ha!
Okay, now we move on to spoiler-free reviews. First one is Happy Death Day, Scott. Tell us about this joyous event.
Oh, my goodness, guys. Happy Death Day. I should have listened to you, Ann. I love movies like Groundhog Day and Day After Tomorrow, where you've got this time loop where someone is reliving the same day over and over again. There's just something about that story that just sounds fun. And they added a twist in Happy Death Day with a character named Tree. Yes, her name is Tree, like T-R-E-E. And when I first heard it, I thought it was maybe short for something that I just wasn't getting. No, her name is Tree, like the plant.
Like all the guys want to climb her?
So
I don't ride them. They just come to me, guys. Huh?
Oh, man. So anyway, Tree wakes up in a random dorm room, as you've seen in the trailer, and she's an awful person. She is just treating everybody like crap throughout this entire first day. She's basically piling up a list of suspects that are going to eventually kill her because at the end of the day, she is confronted by someone in a baby face mask, which apparently is the school's mascot. The school, the college's mascot is this giant baby. That's why they're all over the place. Yeah. Giant big baby face. So, You know this is going to be a winner. So, as you have seen again from the trailer, she is killed, but she wakes up on the first day again in the same dorm room, same hangover, and has to relive the same thing over and over and over again, just like Bill Murray did in Groundhog Day. Guys, here's the thing with this movie. It actually had me from the beginning because Tree is very unlikable, much like Bill Murray was unlikable. But where Bill Murray was a jerk, but you kind of still rooted for him, right? Mm-hmm. I looked forward to every time this chick got stabbed.
You what? You looked forward to her death?
Dude, I could not wait. I was like, can you just please just slice her up right now? Let's just fast forward. Because she is a despicable person, man. Everything she does is just condescending and rude. And it there's nothing redeemable about her. And I understand it's supposed to be a redemption story, and there's a little bit of that in here. But they wasted so much potential with an awesome story with this and just went a completely lame, lazy route, in my opinion. And the way this film wraps up is a complete tonal shift on – oh, man. Like I said, the beginning of the movie had me. I was like, okay, I'm on board. This is kind of fun. I'm chuckling a little bit. The ending goes so batshit crazy, man, that it turned into like 80s B-movie level of cheesy dialogue. I'm talking – I was laughing out loud so loud the couple behind me was cackling at me because I was pumping my fists in the air with how stupid what I was seeing on the screen was, and nobody was having a problem with it. They were actually – having more fun laughing at me, I think, because I'm an idiot. But, dude, it's so bad. I walked out of that theater just going, what did I just spend my money on? And apparently I'm in the minority because a lot of people are loving this thing. If you loved it, that's great. And I fully admit that some people are telling me, well, it was marketed as a comedy. Okay. There were some comedic moments in the trailer, yes. But this goes full on, like it's trying to be a movie that's so bad that it's good. You know, like when we talk about movies like The Room and Plan 9 from Outer Space and all that are just bad, then they're fun to watch because they're bad. No, if you're going to do that, make the whole thing bad. You can't start out with a promising premise and a mystery behind it because the whole thing is her trying to figure out who her killer is, and then they just squander that. and it becomes just this really stupid thing that it ends up with. But some of the rabbit trailers or some of the red herrings they give you are infinitely more interesting than the way that they went, and it drove me crazy. I found it very annoying. The only really good performance was the main character, Jessica Rothy, I believe is how you pronounce it. I mean, she sold me on hating her, and she seems like a very nice person, so hey, her acting's pretty good. Everybody else just felt like they were dialing it in. There's a scene with her father that you're just like, did you screen this guy? Did you really audition for him? Because he's just like the most awkward person on the planet, and it's just it's terrible. Everybody else is awful. The story is ridiculous. There is some quality things in the production. There's some really cool shots because they're trying to make this baby face scary, which it's kind of hard to make a baby face take it seriously. But they do some pretty cool camera tricks that have it kind of off in the background, like Stranger style, that work. But it's nowhere near enough to save this movie for me. If $10 were the full price of admission, I'd give it $4.
All right. Hmm. Yeah, I thought it looked like crap to begin with. So I'm sold.
Yeah.
Sold.
Well, and here's the thing is you might like it. Going into it, knowing that it's ridiculous, expecting it to be ridiculous, especially because you're a child of the 80s, you might like it more than I do. But I maybe. Still think you should wait for DVD or Blu-ray.
I fully plan on it. Although it's around Halloween, Jigsaw's coming out. But if I'm feeling Halloween-y, I might check it out just because I want to see something at the theater. But over that. What about The Babysitter, John? What about that one?
All right. So I can't tell you how much I love this movie, but I'm going to try. You got Cole. Cole's this cool kid. He's a freshman in high school. But unfortunately, he's still a freshman in high school. He still needs a babysitter. And it's all because he's just really scared of everything. He's scared of learning how to drive. He's scared of the spiders that live in his house. He's just scared. His best friend and babysitter is B, and she's actually kind of his protector too. She boosts him up. She makes him feel better about himself, and she lets him feel okay with being a little weird and scared of everything. So on this fateful night, Cole decides he's going to try to sneak around the house and keep an eye on B to see what she does while he's asleep. What kind of adultish things does a senior girl get into while he's asleep? And then the night kind of goes crazy. And crazy by every mean. And it's the relationship between between B and Cole is actually a lot of fun to watch while this moment's building up. But Cole is actually faced from that point on is forced to go through and just challenge himself and get past every one of his little fears. The story is well paced. It has a great rock and roll feel to it. It has a whole lot of great campy tricks they use as far as amping it up a bit. And it's really a lot of fun. Judah Lewis plays Cole, and he's a really great character to kind of go through this story with and kind of carried through with. Samara Weaving as B, and she's really easy to love, even though she really does, and this is in the trailer, she is the big bad of this whole story. Robbie Amell's in here, and it's the first time I've seen Robbie Amell actually act and not seem very wooden and just weird. He seemed comfortable, he was confident, he is a strong character in this, he was awesome. And Bella Thorne's in this. And I finally get why the internet's infatuated with Bella Thorne, because she was a lot of fun in this too. She doesn't take herself very seriously, and she's just a lot of fun. If $10 is the full price of admission, this easily gets 7 for me.
Okay. I definitely am checking that out. It's on my to-do list. My buddy Rob even said it's great, and he never says great about anything, ever. So I'm like, well, this thing's either amazing or awful. So I'm going to check that out. I saw Haze. It's available now on Video On Demand. Just came out today, I believe. It's director David Berkman's take on fraternity and sorority hazing. And what we do is we follow Nick. He's kind of he's a pledge at a fraternity shortly after another pledge has died. And we take this journey following Nick through his little journey of humiliation and debauchery, occasionally some brotherhood. But we also follow Mimi, who's Nick's best friend and stage 5 clinger, because she wants to do everything that Nick is doing. And she pledges to the affiliate sorority so she can be closer to Nick because, as I said, stage 5 clinger. Film follows both of them as they engage in numerous obstacles, parties, and even a couple crimes, all the while forgetting to handle their studies. People just stop going to class, and they're having a hell of a lot of fun, maybe, I guess. And it all leads up to Hell Week. Also, Nick's brother, Pete, is trying to bust a fraternity doing some shady business. He wants to prove that fraternities are dangerous. What I like about the movie is It's shot almost documentary style. Why? I couldn't tell you, but it's shot that way. And many times it does actually make you feel like it's more real than I think it would be otherwise. So there, while it does get a little annoying in some places where I'm like, all right, the shaky cam is getting a little old. It's getting a little tiring, a little bouncy. Most of the time, it makes me feel like I am right there in the moment, and I think it works to the movie's betterment. But Berkman and his actors, they all do a really solid job of selling you on why you would and would not want to pledge yourself. It's really interesting because I don't know much about that aspect of college. I didn't engage in it, so I didn't know. You know, I've seen Animal House and stuff, but that all makes it seem like fun and crazy games. And here, I think, because David Berkman based it on some of his personal experiences, and it really feels like there's just a lot of humiliation, and I don't get the point of that. I mean, at some point, I feel like, do you really have self-respect if you're going through this kind of stuff? I mean, but it gives you both sides of it. Here's why they do it. Here's why they think it's important. It's an interesting movie. I think you should check it out. If $10 is full price of admission, I give it $6. I enjoyed it. It's not one I'm probably going to watch again. There's a horrific scene near the end, which was really, really hard to watch. Really hard to watch. But it's a cool ending too. I it's worth checking out. And what a great ad for community college, I would say. Really. So check that out. It's called Haze. All right, let's go to our new releases. Johnny, what's coming out October 20th?
All right. First up, we got Geostorm.
Yes.
That's the only way to say it is Geostorm. When the network of satellites designed to control the global climate start to attack Earth, it's a race against the clock to uncover the real threat before a worldwide geostorm wipes out everything and everyone, starring Abby Cornish and Jared Butler. Or Gerard Butler. I've heard it both ways. Only the Brave. Based on the true story of the Granite Mountain Hotshots, a group of elite firefighters risk everything to protect their own town from a historic wildfire, otherwise known as what's happening in California right now. Starring Josh Brolin, Miles Teller. Hey, it's Miles Teller again!
Yay!
Jeff Bridges and Jennifer Connelly.
By the way, last time I checked Rotten Tomatoes, that had a 100% tomato rating.
Ooh, you know who's in it? Josh Brolin. That's why. It ain't because of Miles Teller's in it.
I wasn't arguing that point. I'm just saying that they...
That's when people say, you know what? Whiplash was great. He was great in that. I'm like, no, J.K. Simmons was great in that. Go find anybody that thinks it's Miles Teller's movie. Exactly. I'm done.
You sure?
He's perfectly average. I think he's perfectly average. Miles, if you're listening, I think you're a fine average actor.
All right.
Miles, I think you're an above average actor.
Enjoy your life of mediocrity. What's that?
Nothing.
Okay.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think we're all good.
I got two more movies to go.
Oh, man. Rip these out. Let's go.
All right. Up next, The Snowman, in possibly the worst name of a character, Detective Harry Hole investigates the disappearance.
Yeah, that's really on them. That one's on them. That's not you, John. That's on them.
Yeah.
I know. Let's call him Harold.
The disappearance of a woman whose pink scarf is found wrapped around an ominous-looking snowman. Sorry, Michael Fassbender, Rebecca Ferguson, Chloe Sevigny, and Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer, everybody!
I kind of had to see this just for Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
I want to see it because I love a good murder mystery, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then finally, because I don't want to get us too far off track, Boo 2, Madea Halloween. Madea, Bam, and Hattie venture to a haunted campground, and the group must run for their lives when monsters, goblins, and boogeymen are unleashed. Otherwise known as Ernest Goes Scared Stupid. Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Starring Tyler Perry, Patrice Lovely, Brock O'Hearn, and Lexi Pantera, which I'd go see it just for Lexi Pantera if I had to be honest.
All right.
Geostorm. I want to see Geostorm. I know it looks awful to everybody. I love disaster movies. I love the ridiculous nature of this movie. I cannot wait. And I actually have school off on Thursday this week, so I'm going to see it on Thursday. I'm so stoked.
That's yeah, I'm not.
Okay, but,
I'm not
but what movie are you going to go see, Scott?
Yeah.
Boo 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm definitely not seeing Geostorm. But I actually, okay, you know what? I'm going to defend Madea because I got suckered into going to Madea Halloween last Halloween and I was dreading it. I don't want to watch this. I don't care about Madea. And I had a really fun time. I had a really fun time. I would actually see Madea 2 again. in a heartbeat.
Well, Lexi Pantera was in that one, too. Was she great in that?
I don't know who the hell that is, but I don't sure. Either.
I like her yeah. last name, though. Respect. Look.
Okay. But Snowman's going to win. Snowman, I love a good murder mystery. I've been looking forward to it for a while. Reviews are not good, so I'm just hoping for the best. But Fassbender, I will say, man, Fassbender, for being a really strong actor, he picks a lot of garbage.
Assassin's Creed.
He picks a lot of bad movies. Yeah, Assassin's Creed, that's a prime example. It seems like he really desperately wants a franchise. Alien Covenant, and he just, yeah, he's such a good actor, and he's just picking. His agent should be fired. You're gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, for me, it's going to be The Snowman, too, because I need a good murder mystery. And it's got Val Kilmer in it.
Okay.
Am I the only one excited for Val Kilmer?
I love Val Kilmer. I'm not going to pay to see it just for that.
All right, fine. I'll go see Lexi Pantera and Boo, too.
What? Like, seriously, it's starting to be a little creepy. Do you have an obsession with this girl? I never even heard of her before.
Yes, I do have an obsession with it.
All right, that's fair. Well, what about this coming out on video on demand, Scott?
All right, the first one is Leatherface, which comes out on October 20th. A teenage Leatherface escapes from a mental hospital with three other inmates, kidnapping a young nurse and taking her on a road trip from hell while being pursued by a lawman out for revenge. This one stars Finn Jones, who you might remember as Lord Tyrell from Game of Thrones. Also, mm-hmm. Stephen Dorff. Where's that guy been? And Lily Taylor. I want to see that just for the cast. I mentioned on our Patreon episode, I'm not a big Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That was Leatherface, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of that movie, but I just want to see these actors together. I don't know why that combination works for me, but it does.
Where has Stephen Dorff been? Like, he can't be still living off Blade money, right? That's the only thing he's done in the last 20 years.
Anything big. I think we talked about, I think we had a conversation like this about another movie he did on Video On Demand. So apparently he's living on Video On Demand.
Hey, you got to pay the bills.
Finn Jones is also the Iron Fist, and he tells everybody that.
What? That's an excellent point. Maybe that's true. All right.
Also on October 20th is Let Her Out. This follows Helen, a bike courier, who suffers a traumatic accident. As she recovers, she begins to experience strange episodic blackouts, hallucinations, and night terrors that lead her to discover that she has a tumor, a benign growth, that is the remnants of a vanishing twin absorbed in utero. I'm not making that up. I think this is actually a spinoff. I think this is a spinoff of My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Because that's a story that the aunt tells.
Or Basket Case, like part two.
There you go. Weird. Also on October 20th, Jungle. A group of friends join a guide for a trek into the Bolivian jungle, searching for an Indian village. The men soon realize that the jungle is a difficult place to be. And the only reason I'm interested is Daniel Radcliffe. I've mentioned this before, but he is just getting more and more interesting the older he gets. And I pretty much want to see everything that he's in. I love that he grew out of the whole Harry Potter thing and is still doing interesting things.
I think Peter Dennis in our Facebook group saw it and loved it.
Okay. Good to know. October 24th, the movie is Creep 2. And Aaron, if I remember correctly, you watched the original Creep at South by Southwest a couple years ago, correct?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
A video artist looking for work drives to a remote house in the forest to meet a man claiming to be a serial killer. But after agreeing to spend the day with him, she soon realizes that she made a deadly mistake. And that's Mark Duplass, who is the guy. I don't know him from The League. But apparently...
Wait, let me ask a question. So she drove out to meet a guy she thought was a serial killer, but when she gets there, she realizes then she made a mistake?
Yeah.
Like he's too nice or what? When does the mistake part happen?
What is the mistake? What does he do that's worse than a serial killer?
I would like to say that this all sounds too far-fetched, but I've listened to enough true crime to know that this actually happens with investigators and women who are investigating stuff. So this is something that's completely normal, and I've heard stories of before.
I don't know if normal is the right word.
All right. Common?
Okay, there you go.
That's fair. You know what the thing about Creep? It didn't need a sequel. That's the thing. So I don't know why we got one. But whatever keeps the Mark Duplass working. Is it Duplass or Duplass?
Duplass. Is it Duplass?
He's got two S's.
He's not French, so you pronounce the S.
Okay.
There's two of them. It's S's. Duplass.
They cancel each other out if there's two of them, so that's why I didn't say it.
No, that's only negatives.
Oh, gotcha.
My brain hurts. All right, what's too far? This is something. This is like another just quick little segment. Screen Rant ran a piece on how it originally had Pennywise eating a baby, but they cut it out because it went too far, they thought. So I want to know, you guys, give me an example of a movie that went too far for you.
Just one? I got a few.
One, and then we'll go around, and then you can come back to more if you've got more.
Well, the biggest one for me is there's a movie, I don't know why I watched it, called Hound Dog. Have you ever seen Hound Dog?
Is that the Elle Fanning one?
Yes. No, okay. Dakota Fanning.
Dakota Fanning. I knew it was a Fanning.
Yeah, Dakota Fanning be when she was still a little girl, and it's a movie about her getting raped. And I mean, yeah, you got to sit through that. That was rough.
She's a little girl.
Yeah, she's a little. That's, I mean, she's still like 12 years old or whatever.
I can't do that. No, I can't do it. And that's why I didn't watch it. Yep.
Yeah. So that was a little far for me. Not a little far. That was a lot far for me.
Very far. What about you, John?
I think the most recent thing that I've experienced that was too far for me was I'm even forgetting the name of it now. It's that Netflix documentary about the nun.
Oh, the nun that was what was it called?
The Finders or
Keepers? The Keepers.
The Keepers.
The Keepers. Yes.
The
Keepers.
Finders. The Finders. Keepers.
I was in the neighborhood.
This is how John's brain works, and it all makes sense now.
And there's a third and fourth movie that is Losers and then Weepers.
Right.
That comes later.
Absolutely. When I heard what the subject matter of The Keepers was, and there's, you know, my wife watched the show and she thought it was good, but when she started telling me what it was about, she says, "Yeah, you're not going to want to watch this." And I said, "Okay, what's it about?" And she told me what it was. I'm like, "Yep, I'm not watching that. I'm not getting anywhere near that. It's not going to happen for me. We're not doing this. Nope."
Well, at least you had the option. I went into it thinking it was a straight murder mystery. Mm-hmm. When it delved into what it did, I was already invested at that point and couldn't stop. But yeah, that's messed up.
I think I made it to episode 3 and I stopped. It was too much. That's a really twisted. Mm-hmm. I'm going to watch Finders though. That seems like a cool show.
Yeah, it's the lighter version of that. There's a happy ending.
It's a comedy. Dun, 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 right. Benny Hill's playing in the back. I like it. I don't know how either one of you didn't. Human Centipede.
That was on my list.
Human Centipede. As soon as you see someone's face sewn on another person's ass, that's a big gallon jug of nope. I ain't doing this.
I don't know why I watched it. I knew what it was. I knew that everyone talked about how horrible it was. Why did I bother? I think it was just a curiosity thing. Like, it can't really be that. But guess what, guys? It is. Totally is.
Mm-hmm.
I know why I watched it. One of my buddies who's a doctor wouldn't shut up about it. So I ended up watching it for that reason. And though it's not really my cup of tea, I didn't think it was too much.
What?
It didn't like trigger me. Yeah, it didn't trigger me in any way. I even watched the sequel, Free and Clear.
Uh-huh. Well, is your... Okay, well, A, now I definitely know how Johnny's brain works. B, your friend's a doctor. Did he watch it for like research purposes, or what was he... Why was he so...
He just thought it was hysterical. He's into... He likes the whole like body torture kind of stuff because he's so desensitized to it now that it's whatever makes him laugh at this point, and I did it.
Okay, then. I would probably stop hanging out with him as quickly as possible. Scott, what's your what else you got?
Well, my third one was I got a thing when stuff happens to kids that just bothers me. Maybe it's because of my profession, but because
you're human.
The scene in The Exorcist with the crucifix, I saw that when I was like, you know me, man. I didn't see a lot of movies when I was a kid. For some reason, I saw Exorcist when I was younger. Not like really young, but I mean, I was a teenager. And when I saw that, I was like, that did not just happen. Like I could, I mean, there were so many offensive, awful things happening within like 3 seconds. And you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. It's what she's saying. It's what she's doing. It's what is all over her. That was a bit much for me. I hope you guys agree with me.
Yeah, I could take it.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, I thought the movie was boring. So I'm just like, well, at least something happened. You know? I mean, I'm not an advocate for it or anything, but I was kind of like, well, at least something happened. Whenever she screamed and started swearing, I'm like, all right, this movie's getting interesting again. Yay.
I honestly don't remember half the movie, or any of the movies that I stopped because I got to the point where I know there was one this last year. I stopped it because I reached the nope point to it, but there's not many. It doesn't happen often, and I'm pretty thick skinned. I mean, I went to art school. That's you kind of develop that when you go there.
Well, I mean, I didn't stop any of these movies. I finished them, but they're just hard to watch.
I did have to turn away from a scene. Do you want me to explain it?
Is it going to spoil the movie?
I don't think it'll spoil the movie, but I'll give you an indication of what they do in fraternities. Basically, everybody spit in a cup, and then if you didn't do what they said, somebody had to drink it. You know, and
I'm out. Tapping out.
You're welcome.
I got one of those moments in one of the Jackass movies, which you know you probably shouldn't watch those anyway, but there was a similar scene with that involved a horse that I almost threw up.
Oh, tapping out.
Yep. I'm out. This topic's grossed me out. Let's move on to let's close the show out. Recent film or TV recommendations not previously discussed. Anybody got anything? MFA, maybe, John?
Oh, MFA. Oh my God. I cannot. Okay, so I don't know why I brought it up, but but I finally watched it over this weekend, and God, I can't even articulate how I feel about it. It's my second favorite movie of the year. I thought it was fantastic. I loved everything about it. Francesca Eastwood was amazing. I loved watching how her character grew from this mousy art student to being this strong-willed woman. It was great. I had art school PTSD from watching this movie. They got so many of that aspects of the whole movie right.
What about that? I remember you saying that. What do you mean art school? And the whole – for people that didn't listen to me at all – the past like 27 weeks or whatever. It's about a girl who's raped and then seeks vengeance on other rapists, basically. Quit short angle. But what did you mean by art house PTSD? How so?
Art school PTSD. So the putting up of your artwork on the wall, and then you have people who are talking down about it, and they're just talking down about it because they feel like they have to. It's what the teacher wants. And that is what I saw when the critique scene a lot.
Oh,
and
that was hard too. That was hard to watch. Yeah,
imagine that every single day. So, and then the teacher's kind of like, hey, fuck it. You guys are supposed to do this. This is bullshit. Ba-da-da-da-da. And he's just so freaking cool. And that's what kind of art school is. You're dealing with a guy who's got this power trip over being so cool. You got a whole bunch of his minions who want to make him happy, because in reality, art is so subjective. If you get the teacher on your side, then you number one, you get more attention. But number two, you also get a lot easier time going. So there's that aspect of it they had right. There's the going to a party and you had morons drawing on a wall for no good reason of an apartment they're renting. You've got these people who are, oh, right. So I'm just so bored with painting. I know I'm really good at it, but I think it's time for me to move on to something else and really start feeling myself. And bullshit, 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 bullshit. It's all the whole attitude the people had. They did such a good job at capturing every bit of it. My favorite part is she's doing something and people are watching her. She just stops and looks at them, and she's doing something nefarious, and she says, what? It's an art installation. And everyone's like, oh, carry on. Because that's exactly how it would go on. You know, there's, again, they capture a lot of the feeling. It really, like, and that's why when I say I had art school PTSD, those are some of the things I bring up.
Excellent. I'm glad you really liked it, man. Seriously. I know.
I really did.
I was always afraid whenever you sell something too hard, I'm always afraid I'm overselling it. So I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It was definitely a good time. People need to see that. And I've been doing nothing but shouting about it on my Instagram and other places too, because it really is just that good.
And I appreciate, as a friend, that I've been so excited about this movie and you checked it out for me, Scott. That's very cool.
I actually had it. I almost purchased it last night, but I didn't get done writing my review. So I can't watch that while I'm writing a review. So
you don't want to watch anything while you're watching this.
No, pack your bags, because we just went on a guilt trip. So Scott, what have you been watching? Anything?
I started a Netflix series. John, I think you started watching this as well, but I don't remember you talking about it on the show. This animated series called Big Mouth. Have you?
Oh yeah, I did start. I finished it.
Did you finish it? I'm only like three or four episodes in, and I feel kind of bad at how much I'm enjoying this show. It's raunchy as hell, but it's basically about puberty. It's like It's Nick Kroll and a bunch of his buddies. John Mulaney is another comedian in this, and they voice these kids that are in middle school going through puberty, and the way that they kind of represent some of this stuff is interesting. There's a puberty monster that comes. Like,
oh, the puberty monster is my favorite.
Whenever he gets a random boner or something that pops up, it's always the puberty monster that comes in and is talking to them into doing things. And then there's a female version of that when the girl first gets her first cycle and all that. And it's just, they just tackle this kind of stuff head on. It's one of those kind of things. Like, I would never want a kid to watch this. This isn't a way to learn about it. But I almost I wish that there was something more direct like this for kids that wasn't quite. But
somebody in their 20s definitely needs to watch this to be like, oh, I'm completely normal.
Exactly. But it is genuinely funny too. It is well written, and I laughed out loud on multiple occasions. And I'm going to finish it. How many episodes is it, like 12 or 13?
It's like 12 episodes. And I got to tell you, and listeners who've seen this show, every time I saw the puberty monster, I actually superimposed Aaron on top of it because that's the only way it made sense. Because the puberty monster would put people through the sort of things Aaron would put people through and then shame them for it.
That's a really good point. It's genuinely funny. The Jason Mantzoukas is the voice of the creepy teacher, and he, that character cracks me up. He says the most Jason Mantzoukas things you can imagine. It's really funny.
He's also the voice of one of the kids.
What's that?
He's also the voice of one of the kids, the magician kid.
Oh, is he? Okay, I don't know if I've seen that kid yet. Like I said, I'm only like four episodes in, but it's really worth a watch. Just it's animated. Does not mean you should watch it with your kids. It is over the top.
It is gross. There's a lot of gross to it.
Almost like Ren and Stimpy level of gross. not quite that, like this, but it's pretty visual as well. But I'm really enjoying it. I also checked out some older flicks. The one that I picked for my what's this movie? First time I've seen that movie. I'm not going to say what it is, but for those of you that know it, I freaking love that movie. I don't know what took me so long to see that one. I also went back and rewatched Donnie Darko because I was feeling the Halloween-y the other night. Mm-hmm. And that movie is still really good to me. Although I will say that Drew Barrymore did not like her performance in that movie at all. She felt dialed in the whole time. Wasn't a fan of her. And I usually am a huge fan of hers. And then I got another weird random one. I don't know why I decided to watch this, but Punch Drunk Love, which is the guy that directed movies like Magnolia.
Didn't you just get done saying you didn't have any time to watch MFA? I think you literally have watched like 47 hours worth of television in the last.
Wow. Yeah.
I got to go. Jesus. I don't want to actually witness what Aaron's about to do to Scott.
Right I don't now. Care, man. I got my reasons. I'm sticking to him. you guys know me. You hear me talk about like Wes Anderson movies, that weird, quirky style of movies just doesn't click for me. And I don't know why this guy's movies do. But Punch Drunk Love is just, not a lot happens, but I just find every scene fascinating. I relate to that character so much for some reason, and it's a cute little love story, and it's a little guy kind of just grabbing life by the horns, and the ending is awful, but I love this movie. I don't know why. So that's what I've been watching this week.
I rewatched MFA, rewatched that again because I love it, and apparently, Scott had plenty of time to check it out, but that's beside the point. And I started watching Mindhunter on Netflix, which is, it's David Fincher's show, which I know we've talked about a while back, and I've been pretty excited about it. It is not at all what I thought it was going to be. I really thought like we're going to be profiling serial killers every week kind of thing, but instead it's really about how that program came to exist, you know, behavioral profiling and whatnot, and where it kind of grew in the FBI. And it follows a couple of agents as they grow and learn in the field. It's really fascinating. And John, you're watching it too. I mean, where do you sit with it?
I like it a lot. It is fascinating for sure. The thing that I think is interesting is that if I were to equate it to anything, it'd be kind of like Halt and Catch Fire if you're watching that show, or maybe even a little bit of Mad Men where you're watching. It's not nearly about what they're doing. It's more so about the time they're living in and how they're trying to cope with that time in their careers. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. I like how they're doing it. I like the aspect of what they're doing with the whole show, and the characters and acting is really strong.
Yeah, definitely check that out. I'm only a couple episodes in, but I'm pretty riveted by it. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. Remember to stick around if you want to hear us talk about Harvey Weinstein. We don't want to put it in the middle of the show. If you guys, you know, bums that feel good that we tried to deliver feeling, I don't know what I'm saying. But be sure to join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. We're also on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. And find other episodes, reviews, and other info at TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Our email is feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Remember to grab the Hole in the Go with our Apple or Android app, Spotify, or subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. There is an interview with Camille Toman, who directed Never Here, starring Mireille Enos, and that's a new movie that's coming out on October 20th. And as well as the interviews with the director and writer of MFA are also on the website and in the feed. You can find them there. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you, Scotty.
Thanks for having me. And if you like hearing my dulcet tones, you can also hear me on the Gaming Outsider podcast, which is a podcast all about video games, which can be listened to at the same place you listen to this show. So give us a listen. Do appreciate it.
And Johnny Davenport.
Thank you very much for having me. If you want to see what I do as far as some of the fun stuff and activities I put myself through, you can find it all on my Facebook or Instagram feeds. My Instagram is instagram.com/rjohn.draws or @rjohn.draws. And my Facebook is facebook.com/rjohndraws.
All right. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. Yeah, recording. John, are you recording?
I'm recording now.
Scott, you're recording?
Yep.
All right, let's all clap. 1, 2, 3, clap. Ooh, that was bad. Let's try clap. Let's each clap 3 times. Ready?
Okay.
Ready? 1, 2, 3. God damn it. Let's do it until we're in sync.
Let's do it. Here, I'll go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. And on the second 1, 2, 3 for you, clap with me. Got okay. it?
Okay. Yep.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Wow, we are awful. All right, now we're going to talk a little bit about this Harvey Weinstein situation. And the reason why is we received an email. It's a little bit heavier of an email. We try to keep the show grounded, but very light. This listener put a lot of time into it, so I thought it was worthy of discussing. Sylvia said, Aaron and Hose at Large, I have listened to your show every single week for years, but this is my first email, first time caller, if you will. And while it's not a matter of unhappiness or disgust that I am writing to you, it is simply out of a minor disappointment. On episode 289, you were all talking about the Harvey Weinstein situation and how it was bombarding Hollywood with the horrors of power. And while I wasn't surprised, Scott and John danced around the topic a little bit, as they tend to stray away from controversial topics, often understandably so, I was disappointed that you sort of brushed it past and kept moving on. It even felt as though the gravity of the situation was not felt by any of you. I would disagree with that, but I will get there in a second. Now, I know this isn't true because I recall your passionate pleas for unity after the Orlando shooting and for mental health awareness after 13 Reasons Why. So I guess I am writing to ask why this time, on such a horrific topic in entertainment, you chose not to take it on full steam ahead. Bear with me. It's a little bit lengthy of a letter. Full disclosure, I have worked in Hollywood for years. I'm not a higher up nor accomplished in any way, but I've been moderately successful in my vocation for some time. I've heard often the rumors on Weinstein, but he is far from the only one. Those brandishing power in this town have wielded it for their own selfish needs for as long as I've been around. Times like these, we need change. We need those we look up to propel that change. If I never have to see another actress cry herself back to the Midwest to escape her own shame for whatever act she had to endure to make her career, it will be a great day in my book. I've always enjoyed The Hollywood Outsider because you approach topics genuine and fresh, candidly. And you in particular, Aaron, have a love for Hollywood that just bleeds through your voice, almost like a twinkle in your eye. When someone acts larger than the art, you're the first one in the podcast I listened to that smacked them down back in their hole. Ridley Scott and Darren Aronofsky are two recent examples, and I almost felt you were tougher on those two than Harvey Weinstein. Ouch. Perhaps you guys don't see the bigger picture. Maybe you don't realize the scope of your reach, but there are people like me who look up to you guys and your show as leaders themselves. I know you guys shy away from topics that are too heavy or bleak, and as an avid listener, I absolutely love that about your podcast. There is enough negativity and drama in the world today. But I also believe there are rare occasions where it is not only warranted, it is necessary to discuss the ramifications of these events and what it means for my industry and the public at large. Everyone seems to have a cause these days, yet these women were ostracized in private until mainstream media forced the public to acknowledge them. I love your show. I love Brian and Justin. I still love John and Scott and those Sly impersonations. You have a platform. I simply implore you to use it and have a real discussion on the biggest topic in entertainment in years. I promise if you do, I will listen and with a heaping amount of bought popcorn. I'm a hoe for life, Sylvia. Whew. Well, Johnny, are you still there?
I'm still here. I've made it so far.
Okay. Scott, he bowed out, I guess. I guess he read your letter. But he won't be joining us. It'll just be John and I for this one. The story originally broke on October 5th when writers Jody Cantor and Megan Twohey delivered their piece to the New York Times, confirmed by none other than Ashley Judd in the Harvey Weinstein case. It was further confirmed and elevated by Rona Farrow, who was working on a piece for NBC on Weinstein before it was killed. Charges of sexual harassment and assault have prevailed for years in regards to Weinstein. He's also a known bully. So what I thought, John, is we break it down with like three main questions, okay?
Okay.
The first one is, why do you think this was able to remain so secretive for all those years? I mean, the casting couch has been in the vernacular for decades. So is that why? Why do you think this has been – let's just discuss it. Why do you think that?
I think there's something to the idea that Harvey himself said, which is that it's just the way Hollywood was and it has been for such a long time, which doesn't – it's definitely not a right thing to be, but it's something that people just expected. And I think that we've had parents talk to their kids who wanted to go become actors, and they've always been a little afraid of their kids because, of course, these parents have heard stories of what's happened to actors. And it's weird because it always feels like one of those things that it's right out there in the open. We all joke about it. We all know about it. But without some definitive confirmation, which in the last couple of years we've had it with Cosby and now with Weinstein, and even now his brother has been brought out into the light too as being a problematic person, as well as the guy from Amazon. All these people are starting to come out, and it's really starting to show that this is happening. It's no longer a joke. It's not funny, and it can't be said, and it's rough. It really is just rough, and it's hard for me to really articulate everything I feel about it because the subject matter is one of those things that I don't appreciate or have any love for, and it infuriates me.
Man, I think reading people's comments, sometimes it can be worse than the situation. You know what I mean? As I've read articles and I read some of the things that people think. The girls had to know this. Like it's on them that they're treated that way. You know what? The one thing I will say about Hollywood is that the people in charge have all the power. They have all the power. I've dealt with publicists. I've dealt with a lot. Anybody in this business, and I'm sure it's true of any business, seems to have if they have any semblance of power, they kind of lord it over other people. Thankfully, we're an independent outlet, so we don't have to really deal with a lot of that. But I have seen that plenty from going to South by Southwest and other stuff. I've seen it plenty. It happens all the time. And if you think about it, there are a lot of actors and actresses specifically that go to Hollywood because they have a dream of being an actor. And somebody like Harvey Weinstein is lauded as one of the greatest producers of all time. So they get a meeting with him. They go up to a room because, you know, in normal situations, maybe they would think that was weird and they wouldn't do it. But the biggest producer in Hollywood says it. You think, all right, maybe this will be my shot. Maybe that's just how he does things. I mean, he obviously is safe because he's one of the biggest producers in Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm. You go up there and something happens or doesn't happen, whatever happens, you leave thinking, if I say anything, my career is done. Like, my one shot at a career is done. And there are even established actors that were afraid to speak up because they felt he could still ruin their career. The fact that anyone can amass that kind of power where people feel like their entire career, the thing that they dreamt of since they were little kids or have worked their entire lives for to get to that level, that it can all be taken away from them because they tell the public that something a powerful movie producer did was wrong. It's scare tactics. It's a bullying technique, and it works. Because think about it, if you go to your job and that happens to you, I mean, to this day and age, it's happened in every vocation for years, decades, it feels like. I mean, it's something that I think Hollywood has looked past way too long as it is. I mean, it's been a sexist culture for years. And, you know, I mean, Hollywood doesn't do itself any favors by making it all about how people look and beauty and youth and everything else. They don't do themselves any favors in that respect. That doesn't make any of it okay, though. Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't. What do you think of it? So did you see this whole part where Donna Karen came out in defense of Harvey Weinstein?
I know people are like boycotting her and everything else. I don't know if she was being flippant. I don't know if she wasn't sure of like the heft of all the situation. So I'm not on that bandwagon jumping culture that we seem to have now where somebody misspeaks and their whole livelihood should be taken from them. I am just not part of that.
Well, I heard her words and her words are very much giving him permission to act the way he is because women put themselves on display. What do women expect by dressing the way they do and doing and wrapping themselves in the kind of clothes they do? What else would they expect? And that's not women.
That's not right.
Women dressing the way they do is more like a piece of art going to a museum. It's more about, and in some cases, it's about them too. It's about how they want to feel. So they should be able to feel safe in whatever way they want to adorn themselves without having to feel like it means something else entirely. And for a woman to stand up and say something to that effect in defense of a man who has, it's come out that now he's pretty much a monster and has used every bit of power that he has to do what he's felt like doing for years, is, that's sick in itself. A woman should never have stood up for him, period.
Okay, I agree with you. I didn't hear them. I only saw them in print. So, and I saw just in passing. So it's one of those things where I am a very big advocate of, I want facts. I want to hear what the person said, you know, because I know how things can be you know how it is anymore, right? Mm-hmm, somebody says something that nobody reports the context. They only report the words. So I didn't actually hear it. So I'll have to go on your basis. If that's what she was doing, then she's screwed. There's no excuse for that attitude, for that line of thinking even. I mean, like that was 20 years ago. We were past that, I thought.
I thought so too. Well, at least in the professional world, we're kind of past that. In most of the world where you had normal everyday jobs, we were past that. Why is Hollywood, which is always the place where people say it's progressive and it's moving forward and it's pushing out the way we think, why is that lagging behind in that place of all places?
Man, the hypocrisy coming out of Hollywood is just mind-boggling to me lately. It really is. They salute Roman Polanski all the time. They salute Woody Allen all the time. They salute, up until Bill Cosby had 90 accusers, they saluted him all the time. Bill Maher's gone on the record that he knew about Cosby decades ago, and he's talked to people about it, and you know, it wasn't his story to tell, or he would have done more. Seth MacFarlane made a joke at the Oscars about Harvey Weinstein. They knew about Weinstein, and people were like, he's like, well, it wasn't my story to tell. Well, somebody should have told somebody. For Christ's sake, at what point does it become, you know what, you're not heroes for coming out now? Because, and I'm talking about the people in power. I love Seth MacFarlane to death, and I get that he made a jab at him, and you know, it was a very pointed jab. But if you knew that, do something. Do something. I mean, it's not right. I don't care if it's an actress that's desperate for a part, and it happens, and maybe some of them do have consensual sex with a producer, and so they've been, you know, playing that field for years. It's not appropriate. Even the possibility of it being appropriate is so, you know, decades ago. It just boggles my mind that that is okay in some people's book and that they don't do anything. They don't do anything. Do you believe that people don't know what was going on? Like, I mean, I think people can cover up who they are as people if they're sadistic, I guess, to that degree. I know it's a big question to ask because you don't know those people. So you have to speculate. No, it's all rumor.
I mean, everything's, you know, if you try to take apart what everyone's saying online or how they're trying to say whatever that is, it seems to me like Hollywood's as a whole is hanging their head low at the moment in shame of what's gone on. And it's not just Harvey Weinstein that's going to be on trial or even is in trouble here. It's everybody because it's been pretty clear that to some degree or another that people did know and just weren't able to say anything about it or were too afraid of losing their own careers to say something about it. it's clear that, and one of the reasons why it's clear that that's the way it is because once you started seeing numbers come out of people, a greater number than Harvey Weinstein start to form, when that side of the camp started getting bigger and bigger and bigger, when people started feeling safe, and that's when everyone came out and said, okay, well, there's a place for me to be safe and say what I know or say how I feel or say what happened. There's a place for me to be safe and do that. People ran for that spot. Mm-hmm. And that's it's a sign that something was there. I have no ability of telling you how much of it it is, but just that the group size being what it is and how it just keeps on growing tells me that, yeah, a lot more people knew than we think.
So what do you think should happen now? This is the second question. What do you think should happen now with the Weinsteins? Both the industry, the world. I mean, do you think anything will actually change or should change? I mean, I know it should change, but what do you think should change?
I mean, the kind of changes that should be taken are the sort of thing that happens in the professional world where a producer wants to meet with an actress or an actor and they're not allowed to be left in the room alone with them. That's what happens in the real world. I when I have to talk to one of my employees, I'm not in the room alone with them. I always have somebody else with me so that at least there's always a third party that can verify whatever happens. And I think that sort of thing should happen professionally. It should be handled more as a professional business as opposed to, which I hate saying because it's supposed to be a creative outlet. It's supposed to be a place for creativity and all that. But for us to make people feel safe, it should be handled more clinically than it is. And it seems like it's a very organic process and the organic process of it isn't as necessary because it is a breeding ground for this sort of behavior. Mm-hmm. Did I make sense there?
No, you made absolute sense. Like you shouldn't be meeting in hotel rooms, period.
Right. No, if you're going to meet in a hotel, you meet at the bar, you always have somebody, a third person there with, if not a fourth, you can't be a person of power and be by yourself with somebody beneath you that far. It protects the producer or the director. It protects that person just as much as it protects the starlet or the star or whoever. It protects the both sides of the party because it's not always a fact of, hey, Joe Blow, the director, touched me in a weird way. And yet it may or may not have actually happened. That third party could actually help protect the director, you know, or at least the outside
mediator.
Party can
have
make
a mediator,
sure.
You know, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, a mediator. Yeah.
No, I think what you're saying makes total sense and it should be handled clinically. Clinically is a good word. Instead of it being this loose, casual, hey, let's go hang out by the pool and talk. No, I mean, you meet in a business room, you meet in a boardroom, you meet in HR. Does it Hollywood have HR? I don't know. It doesn't seem like it sometimes. No. So you meet somewhere where there are people with them. There are your agents with you, your mediators with you. Somebody's there. Because unfortunately, it seems like it happened a lot. All the people coming out, this happened a lot. And it's unacceptable. It is absolutely unacceptable. And I know there are businesses where that happens, where you have people of power that brandish that power and they affect people's careers if they don't get the attention that they feel that they should. And that should never be okay. Like if you put in steps, you put steps in place where those things can't happen, where every meeting has to be handled in a certain way, a certain criteria, all that, there's really no way that that can happen, you know, because people don't make those kind of advancements or those kind of sexual harassment. They don't say things like that. They don't do things like that. When there's other people there, they only do it in private where you can't defend yourself, where mm-hmm. it's he said, she said. So if you eliminate that, if studios eliminate that, if production companies eliminate that, that's no longer a problem. And I don't think it's fair that any actress has to go into or actor has to go into a meeting. Let's just say actor in general and wonder if I feel like someone is giving me those vibes. If I reject them, that's going to affect my career. Nobody should feel like that in any job whatsoever. But if you make sure you have boundaries and you have borders, I think that would eliminate a lot of it from being a problem in the future.
Yeah. I feel like this whole situation has robbed us of a lot of great actresses that we could have had more of mm-hmm. and better in other things. From what I can tell and from the list of actresses who have come forward, I feel like there are so many actresses who are always just barely on the cusp of making it big, who were just, I think we're robbed of them. And it's a shame that we were because of this whole thing.
You know what else bugs me? There are a lot of guys in power that have abused that power for this sort of thing. And think of all of the great artists that never rose to that. Like they had one flop and they were out of the industry and stuff like that, but they had such a spark in them, but they were good people. And those people never got a shot because some asshole was in their spot doing stuff like this.
Yep.
You know, and all the actresses that went home because they had a couple issues like this and they couldn't do it anymore or anything else. Or maybe, you know, a lot of other factors happen because of depression and everything and situations like this. I don't know. It's a horrible situation. How do you feel about Hollywood's response? This is question number three. Hollywood's response. The actors coming out against Harvey, sharing their stories. Me Too, that was a campaign that kind of got trending. I think it was Alyssa Milano kicked that off. Revoking his Academy membership, that was a big one. How do you feel about all that?
I think that the revoking of his Academy membership is just, it should be like the tip of the iceberg. They should start going, okay, well, we just did it for this big person. We need to start going down the line and start getting rid of some people who we've just let hang out here, even though they're despicable. So that's part of it. The other thing that I have to say about this is that, and I hint to this every now and again on the show, but my opinion is, to me, not really worth a lot. And the way I feel about certain things, I always kind of question it because I went through something in my life, and the way it was handled when I tried to bring attention to it was less than desired, I guess, much less than even I could have asked for or wanted or hoped for. It was a pretty, like, any sort of attention I wanted to bring to it was just rebuked in any way, shape, or form. The only way I want to leave that is by saying me too. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it happens to a lot of people. People, it's not just any kind of person or any one person. People in power love to rule and lord over other people that they have power over. And like I said, in a business where it's all about celebrity and fame and everything else, I mean, it's just... And people are willing to take risks like that, like meeting somebody in a hotel room because they hope maybe that'll help make her. Maybe that's the only way they do business. You know what I mean? It's not okay. They got to make those changes. In terms of Hollywood and my question, I love that actresses are coming and speaking out. I love that actors are coming out. I love that everybody is speaking out and saying, hey, it's okay. Next time, it'll be okay. You know,
I hope it is better. I hope it is okay next time.
I hope so. I hope this isn't just like a fleeting thing. You know, like, hey, we gotta wash the Harvey out of us, and then we'll be back on board, and we're going back to Hollywood business as usual. I pray that it doesn't happen. You've got an opportunity here to set the pace, and this is the one thing that bugs me is Hollywood always acts like they're holier than thou in a lot of respects. This is a fact. There are so many things that they have a pulpit. And they preach from it about whatever their respective values are. And that's fine. I mean, I firmly believe if you have the opportunity to speak your mind, you should do so. And, you know, people will love it or they'll hate it, whatever it is, that you have the right to do that. And if you have a captive audience, why not? I mean, we're doing that right now. I can't really preach about them doing it. On the same token, when something that you've been preaching against happens in it lands in your pool, in your backyard, handle it. Make sure it doesn't happen again. Don't just talk about it. Make sure it doesn't happen again. Put steps in place so it does not happen again. Revoking his Academy membership, I thought was great. Why does Roman Polanski still have his? Why does Woody Allen? I mean, maybe you could make the argument for Woody Allen because it's a different kind of case, I guess, but I don't see how. I don't see how. I think Cosby still has his membership, if I'm not mistaken. Why do these people? Victor Salva.
At least they haven't announced it.
Why is Victor Salva still making movies? I mean, and there's so many things that, yes, you're addressing Harvey and you're addressing him. What about the other things you're not addressing? What about those? Those are important too. And I feel like they need to pay attention to that and correct the ship so it doesn't happen again. So the next starlet or wannabe starlet that ends up in Hollywood doesn't meet some big shot producer and he destroys all of her inner soul with a meeting or two. We need to make sure that doesn't happen. Hollywood needs to make sure it doesn't happen. All businesses do too. I mean, my God, it's 2017. Treat women as equal. It's not that hard to not be a dick.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. It really isn't. So, I'm pretty okay at it.
Yeah, I mean, my morals are gray as can be, but I know of some things you just can't do. You just can't do. So, Sylvia, thank you for the email. That was a lot of length, and I hope we covered some of your topic. Is there anything else you want to say in closing on this topic, John?
No, I think I've dug deep enough into everything that I felt like I need to dig into.
Okay. In closing, I do want to say something, like I always do. You are right, Sylvia. We do have a platform. I appreciate you reaching out and asking us to discuss this. It's not part of our normal show. I agree. It's an important part of entertainment right now. And I also agree that I personally do love entertainment. I love movies and TV. I adore the magic behind telling a story and bringing it to life. On the other hand, I abhor celebrity. Always have. Celebrity to me is a form of self-adoration I cannot understand. Maybe it's low self-esteem. Maybe it's ego. It can be any of those things. What it definitely is not is hubris. So the pursuit and maintaining of celebrity has always bothered me. I absolutely admire all of the actors speaking out now. I think it's very difficult for a lot of them, and they've probably been wearing that shame for years. At the same time, I also take issue with others in their midst, not them, others in their midst. I don't mean like the struggling actor or director desperate to catch that break so they know they have zero power to speak up. There are entertainers and executives out there who we haven't heard from who were definitely aware of Harvey's behavior. With this many accounts, it's impossible that there aren't any. They had power of their own and they did nothing. Nothing. It happens not just in Hollywood, but in many businesses around the world. They failed all of those women and they did it for their own selfish reasons. Power and celebrity. Not only that, but many in Hollywood have enabled this continued hypocrisy on their own. Meryl Streep, man, Meryl Streep is one of my favorite actresses in history. And she stood up for Roman Polanski's Best Director win to give him an ovation. And it broke my heart. It broke it. A convicted rapist who fled the country to avoid a judge throwing the book at him. And Meryl is celebrating him because of his art. Woody Allen married a stepdaughter, was accused of a lot worse by his daughter, Dylan. Yet actors still trip over themselves to work with the guy. Victor Salva, like I was just talking about, convicted for molesting a child on his film set and returned years later to direct Powder and the Jeepers Creepers series. Corey Feldman, guy's mocked all the time, right, for his odd behavior, but he has a history of abuse in the industry. Corey Haim as well, we lost him. And of course, the late, great, well, not late anymore, but his career is late, Bill Cosby. And the powerful, they just keep skating by in Hollywood. Not only do they skate by, they win Oscars, they are celebrated, and people like Rose McGowan are called crazy numerous times for her claims about Hollywood, but now they're taking her seriously. Now it's too much, now it's too far, now. Man, I love your movies, Hollywood. I love your TV shows, your entertainers, and your artists who act like respectful, decent human beings. I love every one of them. Like, we're all just people just trying to make a living in whatever our business is, and even though we're all human and our morals kind of float with the wind, we all know that some things are just wrong. It's not just one man. All of this is just wrong. And to those in Hollywood who have had or have an opportunity to put an end to sexual harassment like this, racist or gay blacklisting, fat shaming, a myriad of other despicable behaviors, but you decided to just do nothing and ignore the pleas for help from that actor in that room, I don't know what else to say except fuck you. You could handle these things. You could make sure it doesn't happen to the next person. So what are you doing about it? Do something. You have power. You have celebrity. Make sure it doesn't happen to someone who doesn't. I try to live my professional life a certain way, and I hope that this entire issue has taught many of us that it is our duty to stand up for those people who cannot, to confront things for those too afraid to. And I could find a no more appropriate quote to close this episode out than from a movie. Compromise where you can, where you can't, don't. Even if everyone is telling you that something wrong is something right, even if the whole world is telling you to move, it is your duty to plant yourself like a tree, look them in the eye, and say, no, you move.